Who the fuck is that guy? Who the fuck is that?
Yeah.
Hey, what's going on?
Nothing.
That was weird. I didn't even hear it ring on my end or anything.
It's because I'm a professional like that.
Okay. That's impressive. Welcome to MMA and Stuff on HalfGuarded.com. My name is Matt. That is the esteemed Michael Coughlin. We're going to talk about MMA and stuff this week. Does that work for you, Mr. Coughlin?
Stuff is a bit ubiquitous, so yes.
Yes, it sure is. This past weekend on Saturday night, we had UFC Fight Night, Brunson versus Machida. This was UFC Fight Night 119 for everyone keeping track at home. It was in Sao Paulo, Brazil.
Hey, John, on the board, it's 119. Yeah, 19, not 18. We got to get it right. We're keeping track.
John's such a fuck up. Did he have it as 120?
Yes.
John. Attendance was 10,265, mostly Brazilians. And in the main event, we had Derek Brunson defeating Lyoto Machida by knockout at 2:30 of the first round. This was Machida's first fight back in, I think, like 18 months because he got suspended for some weird over-the-counter drug
dick
that
pill.
Didn't even test positive. It wasn't a dick pill. I don't know. He drinks his own urine, so I don't know if he needs dick pills or not. That remains to be seen. But anyway, first fight back was not a good one for Machida. He got knocked out in the first and did not look particularly good against, you know, a top 10-ish middleweight in Brunson.
If drinking your own urine could give you an erection, guys would be fucking carrying gallons around with them.
It's hard to pee. It's hard to urinate when you have an erection, though.
Yeah. Anyway, Brunson just floored him. Just floored him and grounded and pounded him, and old Leon Machida's dead. He should never fight again. You know, years off, and he's old anyways, and his style is never going to age well, so sorry, dude. Yet another useless thing in Brazil.
That Machida era never really happened, did it? Remember when he beat Shogun and he was 16-0 and everyone was like, oh my god, this guy's going to dominate for years to come, and just not, after he won the title, it was like he could never get back there. He had some decent wins, but yeah, I think he's like 7-6 since that first Shogun win.
Yeah, this is one of those times where I really wish that I could.
No, I'm sorry, 7-8.
I wish I could project my thoughts into the world, because they involve like a reference to the television and a specific memory. Because on Saturday night, I wish I could just pull up when, as they're talking about Machida, Daniel Cormier says, "You gotta be like a really great fighter if there's like an era named after you or something." And I'm like, what the fuck? So Daniel Cormier thinks that there was a Machida era, apparently. But you're right. He kind of was just there, and then whatever. I gotta say it now. Daniel Cormier's fucking horrible. He's just really bad at, like, I think at everything he does. But especially, like, announcing. He offers nothing. He doesn't seem to know anything. He's just sounds kind of phony. But, like, dorky, nice, phony, but still just kind of, he's always playing at it. He's just not, it's not gonna take. It's not gonna take with Dominic Cruz either. Just stick with Paul Felder. Just, that's all we got, guys, alright? Daniel Cormier, he's just fucking terrible.
The post-fight interviews in particular were annoying. Like, he was, like, fist bumping everybody and, like, yeah, buddy. I found that more tiresome than actually his commentating. But, I'm not a big DC fan in the booth. Good fighter, not a great commentator.
But he'll never be the best fighter, because that's his lot in life, to always be just there but not quite. Like, God wants to make sure that he's satisfied in life. Daniel Cormier lives a satisfactory life. But it's never going to be what he knows it could have been.
Post-fight,
he could have been an Olympic champion with a child that didn't die and a world champion in MMA. Instead, he's got none of that.
Still not a bad, bad life. Better than most.
I don't know, that dying kid thing sounds like it sucks pretty bad.
That would be rough. But I'm sure there's somebody who has two dead kids.
Osama bin Laden's mom.
Derek Brunson, after the fight, called out Luke Rockhold. Do you like that fight for Brunson? Or you never care about Brunson, no matter what he does, I feel like.
I really don't. He's just he's there, and I have... He's just got to be the most vanilla human being ever. He just fades into the background. Usually, like, black guys stand out. And he just is just there. I feel like he may have been in the UFC for, like, 12 years or 12 months. So, yes, for him, fighting Luke Rockhold would be good. Or he could just fight, you know, milk toast and vanilla whipped cream.
In the UFC, he's only lost to Yoel Romero, Robert Whittaker, and Anderson, and a lot of people thought he won the Anderson fight. So, I mean, he's good, but I don't know what beating Machida in 2017 really means for him. Rockhold would be a good test, but I don't think it's fight Rockhold wants. Rockhold probably wants a higher ranked guy, but... we'll see what happens for old Derek Brunson next.
I'm guessing Brunson is like him and Robert Whittaker, I think, are in that same class where it's just like all these guys showed up and nobody like had any personality, and my brain just was like, I'm done with these guys. They're not going to be anything. Look at Whittaker. He's not really ripped or anything. Come on. He's foreign. And then they both like ended up being really good, and all of a sudden I'm like, what the fuck? Where did that come from?
Yeah, well, it's funny because the four guys who were dominating the division a year or 2 years ago are all getting a little longer in the tooth, you know, and now these guys in their early 30s, Brunson are catching up to him. Machida's older, you know, Anderson's older, Romero, all these guys, Jacare, they're all in their late 30s now. So they're taking a step back while, you know, your Whittakers and Brunson's are kind of right in the middle of their prime, so it kind of makes sense, but it just takes a while to happen sometimes.
But even, like, if there's a change in the guard type of thing with new names, they don't do anything, like, spectacular. Like, when you watch them, they're very good, but, like, if you watch Yoel Romero, he'll do shots, you go, holy shit, this is something next level. And like, you see the Jacare, and, you know, Rockhold looks like just such, he's just got that big chiseled look. He just looks like a badass. And it's like Whittaker just kind of plods and just wins these fights and he's good. And it's just like, oh yeah, he won. He just keeps winning. I guess he's there.
Somebody who is making some noise is Colby Covington. He defeated Damian Maia in the co-main event. Co-main event. He won by decision over Damian Maia, 29-27, 30-27, 30-26. Here's the deal. Beating Damian Maia is no easy task. Again, though, it's another guy pushing 40, getting older, slowing down. Maia could not get a takedown, and he tried. And Covington was able to just land more shots on the feet, but I kind of felt like Covington just looked kind of wild and a little bit amateurish. Because, I mean, his bread and butter is getting a takedown and ground and pound and taking the back, that sort of thing. That's how he's won a lot of his fights. But he didn't want to do that with Maia, who's like the best submission guy in the history of the UFC. So it ended up being kind of a crappy kickboxing match. Covington got cut open. Maia still took the brunt of the damage, though, and clearly lost on points. So it's a good win for Covington, but I wasn't, like, blown away by the performance.
In totality, he did great, but we'll get to that in a bit. But in the cage, I watched the first round. I'm like, well, Covington's it's kind of backfiring on him because I'm like, well, Maya's landing much bigger shots. And Covington, he looks like a guy that he's obviously really tough physically and mentally to keep doing what he did, just that relentless pressure. Like, he had a game plan of, I will wear him out. It's, you know, I'm just going to go at him and go at him and go at him, because he must have thought that, you know, Maya had was susceptible gas tank-wise. And in that sense, I mean, it's really impressive to fight, like, at that pace. But he was getting lit up by Damian Maya. All of a sudden, like, this is one of those fights where I'm like, fuck you, Daniel Cormier. You're really bad at your job. Because, I got stuff in my throat. Yes, people, it's that. Because he kept saying, like, oh, Maya, look at him, he's boxing, he's never done this before, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, he spent, like, 5 fucking years pretty much just being a striker for some fucking reason. Like, that, like, it was the whole, like, becoming a grappler. That's all new when he went to the welterweight. And so, like, he actually kind of showed a lot of those skills. And Covington is just there. He's just so tough, but he didn't use his wrestling offensively, obviously. He just used it defensively. And what he did was great. Like, I feel like we haven't seen sprawls like that in a long time. Like, almost everything these days is kind of hop on your foot and go to the cage and fight it off that way or something like that. Like, this is a lot of just sprawling and throwing your hips into the back of someone's head and just wearing on them. And that was good shit. Like, he wasn't worried at all. So, you know, Covington, he did what he had to do, and he went out there and he beat Maya. And again, he kind of beat him in the only way he could, and he did it as exciting as he could. So I give the guy a lot of props.
Post-fight, Covington called all the fans in the arena, the Brazilian fans, filthy animals, called Sao Paulo a dump, got booed like crazy as he was leaving the cage. They were throwing water bottles and trash at him. It was the scene where there's 10 security guards surrounding the guy as he's leaving because everyone's hurling garbage and crap at him. He also called out Tyron Woodley for the next welterweight title fight. Do you think he did enough here to get it? Did he jump the line, or are there too many, you know, Wonder Boys, Masvidals, Robbie Lawlers, those type of guys ahead of him?
I mean, personally, I think he's earned it. If I'm Tyron Woodley, I'm sitting there going, please, yes. Like, this could, I think if he and Woodley fought, it would easily be the equivalent of when Sonnen and Anderson fought. I think there's the heat that would develop because they've trained together. They were former ATT teammates, things like that. And Covington, you know, he comes across as a bit of a tryhard sometimes, but when he's on, oh boy, he's got that thing. Because you can see it connecting with people on the internet. Like, this became like a big talking point about, like, because he really went for it. He didn't just do some Conor McGregor kind of joking or Chael Sonnen kind of joking. He was just like, fuck you, Brazil. You're garbage. That's it. Like, there's no hiding it. There's no couching it. It was just like, you're lower than me. And then, much to his credit, Brazil completely lived up to the reputation and made it a very violent and dangerous environment for him simply because he said, you guys suck. This is almost like, it's like I'm in 1957 Alabama pro wrestling or something like that, and like the Nazi just walked out, and everybody's like, fuck that real fucking Nazi! Like, come on, people, like, it's a joke! You don't actually throw shit at them, but, you know, if someone calls you an animal, I guess you gotta play along. You know, that's the rules of improv, yes and. He yes and them.
Covington said, I was listening to an interview with him, and he said that they wouldn't allow him to go to the post-fight press conference because of security reasons. And then he went directly back to his hotel, and I guess his dad was staying in the hotel with him. They did not leave the room at all the next day until it was time for his flight at 7:30 p.m. Like, he had a 10 o'clock flight out, and he basically spent like 24 hours in his hotel room because they were afraid that, you know, some Brazilian fans would bump into him and, you know, attack him, essentially. So apparently there's some real heat there. Whether that translates to the U.S. and how many people saw this Fox Sports 1 card, we don't know. But Covington, he's in the mix. Is he deserving of the next title fight? Probably not. In this era, does that mean much? No. But we're going to have to see if what happens, obviously, this weekend with the Thompson-Masvidal fight, if one of them wins emphatically, they cut a good promo, who knows?
They won't, though.
Robbie Lawler's got a fight coming against Dos Anjos.
That one I could see probably getting it, but I mean, I will say though, the thing with Covington, one, he's going to get publicity, he's going to become a bigger star because the bar's kind of lower these days, but also, I think it's one of those deals where this is something if you're a promoter, you're going, okay, I can put this guy in a position and he will deliver. Like he'll deliver that extra promo. He'll do what needs to be done. So I know that if we do a tour, he's gonna work up a lot of interest. And especially, I mean, with Covington, I mean, holy shit. Again, some of this is probably overblown, but Ricardo Liborio, one of the founders of Brazilian Top Team, who then was one of the co-founders of American Top Team, where Covington trained, quit. He quit over the remarks. Which, again, maybe it's a little overblown, but a lot of these Brazilians, like, people think Americans are patriotic and nationalistic. We ain't got shit on Brazil. Like, they're fucking nuts with this stuff. Like, seriously, can you imagine, like, any American, if he's, like, overseas, trained in some gym, and the guy cut a fucking pro wrestling heel promo saying, I don't like America, you know how stupid we would look if we quit? We'd be like, what are you, an asshole? And they're doing it en masse.
Yeah. I mean, to me right now, the welterweight division is awesome. Like, it's the best. I mean, a lot of times it's the best division. That and lightweight are usually considered, you know, the most talent-laden divisions. But welterweight's really good. Between, you know, you've got I've said it like 8 times already, I know, but Thompson-Masvidal fight, the Lawler-Dos Anjos fight. Now you've got Covington. Covington's ranked number 3 in the welterweight division. He moved up 4 spots, which I think is insane. But you've got RDA, Condit's coming back for that Magny fight. You've got Darren Till coming off that big win. Then you've got the Ponzinibbio, Platinum Mike Perry fight. There's a lot of fun fights and movement. Kamaru Usman. There's a lot of good younger guys and older guys with names in this division now, where it's going to be interesting to see how everything shakes out, but there's a lot of fun fights. I'd love to see them book Covington versus Till. I think that would be interesting and really see where both guys are. Could Covington stand with Till? Probably not. Can Till stop Covington's takedowns? Probably not. Like, there's some intrigue there. They're both younger guys in the division, don't really have names yet. Get that on a Fox card, semi-main event, something like that. Then I think either one of them could be ready for a title shot, but probably not yet.
Yeah, I could see that happening. If I was Covington, I'd be like, what the fuck? Like, I just co-main evented a big show in Brazil and beat a multiple-time title challenger and smoked him and then cut a fabulous promo. I'm not fighting the fucking Liverpudlian little bitch. But, it would work. It's going to be anything there. The one thing I think that, again, some of this stuff is really tough to tell how the UFC works anymore. Because back in the day, you kind of had a pretty good idea of how Lorenzo, Dana, and Joe Silva's brains played out. Nowadays, I don't know what the fuck they're going to do. Like, I really don't know what their logic is. But, like, in the old days, Covington would have got a lot of extra credit also because he challenged a guy like Maia, where everybody knows, like, that's the kind of guy that people want to avoid. Because he can make you look bad. And, like, he fucking said, I'll do it in the guy's hometown and came through. Like, like, Dana used to love that shit. Whatever the fucking dude. Oh, fuck. I just guarantee we're going to see WMEI. One of those fuckers has been putting his balls on somebody's desk or something. Guarantee that shit. So, I don't know how ball droppers do it, but we'll see.
I mean, besides the Maya win, his next biggest win is Dong Young Kim. It's not like he's got this impressive resume, but maybe he talked his way into it. You never know. They might base it on his increase in Twitter followers versus somebody else's. Who knows what they base it on?
His Q rating. His Q rating is what matters.
That's right. That's what I was looking for. Prior to that, Pedro Munhoz defeated Rob Font by guillotine choke, 4-0-3 in the first.
He caught Font and then grabbed that choke, and it was a good finish.
Francisco Trinaldo defeated Jim Miller by unanimous decision, 29-28 on all 3 cards. Tough loss for Miller. You kind of got to wonder, you know, how many more fights does he have left in the tank at this point?
He's got to be done. Like, he wasn't there in that fight. He was trying, but he couldn't stop takedowns. And when he's on the ground, he was just essentially locking up full guard. And he wasn't trying to move and get away. He just, like, resigned to it. And I'm like, oh, man, you're done. And it's not like Trinaldo's, like, some, you know, world beater here.
Right. Yeah, that's three losses in a row for Miller, all by decision. But 0-3 for the calendar year of 2017. Not good. We also had Thiago Santos defeating Jack Hermanson by TKO with 1 second left in the first round. I can remember him rocking Hermanson and then just like pouncing on him at the end of the round. And it was one of those where the ref waved it off just as the horn sounded. So you weren't really sure what had happened, if the round was over, or if he was calling the fight off, but he was calling the fight off.
Yeah, it was really close there, and I'm kind of glad, because it's not like the fight was a super success before then, and look, dude got knocked out. I was, like, watching that.
That little badass John Lineker defeated Marlon Vera by unanimous decision, 30-27, 29-28, 29-28. Big size difference here. Like, Lineker looks so short and stout, like a little teapot, versus Vera. Who I never thought was like a huge bantamweight, but there was a major size discrepancy here. It looked like they were two divisions different, but Lineker hit so hard that guys just like backpedal the whole fight and are afraid to get hit, and that kind of was how this one went.
It's a shame that Lineker he'll never be what he. I'm watching this fucking TV commercial. What the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
It's a fucking like kids in kindergarten. And the Asian school teacher is looking over them, and she's wearing a sweater, but she has enormous breasts. They're like inappropriately big for a school teacher. What the fuck is this commercial for? This is weird. Easy pre-approval home loans. Navy Federal Credit Union. What the fuck do big tits in grade schools have to do with the Navy? It's like the two things that nobody in the Navy wants to be around. Tits and little kids, we hope.
It seemed to get your attention, though.
That's true. And now I got to join the Navy and go to a credit union.
Are you watching the World Series?
Yeah.
Is that on? Yeah. Game 7, right? This is like a must-win game for both teams, huh?
It's the last game of the year.
It's a bad joke.
Yeah, I know.
All right. Prelims. I watched them, but I don't really remember them. Vicente Luque defeated Nico Price by Darcechoke, second round, 408.
I have no recollection.
You don't get Fox Sports 2.
Oh, yeah, that explains it. Fuck that shit.
Yes. We'll just move along then. I think that's a good recap of this fight night. What number was it, John?
118.
119, John. God damn it.
Seriously, dude? I fucking said it'd change it. Look, no, I look like an asshole on the fucking air. What the fuck am I paying you for? Get the fuck out of here.
119.
Thank you. Fight of the night went to Alisu Zaleski Dos Santos versus Max Griffin. Performance of the night, Derek Brunson and Pedro Munhoz. All those guys got an extra 50 G's, baby.
There should be like an awesome moment of the night so Covington can get something.
It could be anything. It could be them like spilling the ice all over the octagon. Like those guys could win money. It could be anything.
There really should be something like that. Like guy that made the overall show worth watching. It's kind of an odd post fight bonus to hand out. Like kind of like the end. The Saved Our Ass award goes to Joe Rogan once again, and the Saved Our Ass award goes to that drunk girl in aisle 3 who got in the fight and started the wave.
John Jones is back, sort of.
This award goes to John Jones for failing another steroid test.
Just for being awesome. He is awesome.
Johnny Henders could get the fucking thing when he tries to weigh in on Saturday and fails.
He'll make 185.
He missed it before. He missed it last time.
That was a fluke.
He's only tried twice.
He's training at Jackson Wink now. He says he's gonna dominate and never lose again.
Yeah, well, we'll see who wins that battle of the bulge, Johnny.
So speaking of Johnny, Johnny Bones Jones is back. He was pretty quiet lately on the old social media, but for some reason he felt the urge to send out a tweet at 2:54 a.m. last night. I'm not sure if that's Eastern Standard Time or Albuquerque time. What is that, Rocky? Is that Rocky Mountain? Is that West? What is that?
It doesn't matter. They're Mountain Time, I think.
All right. Anyway, so on Twitter he said, "The God I serve specializes in the impossible." Then today, actually just 3 hours ago, he wrote, "I just had the most amazing lobster roll at a place called Flatfish in Albuquerque. It was amazing. Just couldn't keep it to myself." Really weird.
Okay, yeah, that Johnny Bones Jones, mine says 1:56 a.m.
Okay, good. I'm glad we clarified. When did he have the lobster roll, according to your phone?
Oh, yeah, let's check that out. Hey.
Mine says 5:58.
What day is it where you are? 4:58.
Okay, interesting.
Anyways, he's a great man there, isn't he? I feel like he's it's kind of like he's very Trumpian on Twitter. Very, very much just like he kind of has these lulls where everybody's like, "Hey, what's going on?" And then out of nowhere, boom, it's 2 in the fucking morning and I love Jesus. You're like, "Whoa, okay. Oh, something good's coming next."
Well, Dana White did an interview recently. He was on with Jim Rome. And he was talking about Jones, and White said, "I don't know. He's not just about the money type guy. He's really not that kind of guy. I just think that John likes to party, and he's a guy that likes to go out and have fun and do whatever it is that he does. And I think the money and the fame made it 1,000 times worse. This guy couldn't control himself and would completely go off the deep end. Not sitting here acting like Mr. Holier Than Thou. We've all gone and had fun and probably partied a little too much here and there, but he consistently kept doing it. Even when he would completely fuck up, he would pull himself together and come out and completely fuck up again. Last time when he came back, fans forgave, and he was the most popular fighter, and everybody wanted to see this guy succeed, and he did it again. It's just unbelievable."
I love Dana. He's so fucking honest in his way. He just fucking rips him. Just
right.
Fuck this fucking moron. That's why people trust him. He says exactly, there's no sugarcoating it. That's exactly what everybody's sitting there going, "This guy's a fucking idiot." And yet, he's a fucking complete liar. Because he's full of shit. John Jones is not in the UFC and has nothing to do with his partying. It's only because the moron used a PED. He's not kicked out of the company for cocaine. He's not for beating women. He's not for drinking. Not for weed. Not for doing too much partying or anything like that. It's for a performance enhancing drug. If he had not failed for the steroids, they wouldn't give a fuck if he's out till 4 a.m. every night of the fucking week. And why should anyone else? Because he's a god, apparently, no matter what he does. Maybe this is how gods live. They just do what they want. They fuck what they want to fuck. They have 50 children. They drink. They drive cars. They just run around with money they can't spend. They run back to get, like, thousands of dollars in cash. They wave it in your face. And then when it's time to beat the living shit out of you, all you can do is stand there and watch as they do it in a more and more spectacular manner. And they're richer.
White went on, "Even worse than that, this guy was looking at jail time. This judge gave him another shot, and this guy was looking at some serious jail time and a lot of bad stuff. And that still didn't wake him up. If that's not a wake-up call, you're unfixable."
There's two. What's he gonna do? What's the judge gonna throw? "Well, you violate your probation by failing for some rare fucking estrogen thing that's not against the fucking law, I'm sure."
I don't know. John Jones is also on Instagram. He's putting up pictures of himself. It says #day1, #pick yourself up and start again, #gold medal. and it's pictures of him hitting a heavy bag.
So, like, yesterday, he was like, all right, my last day to be a fuck-up. Is that what it is? Like, today's day one. So, yeah, Halloween must have just been one big day-long fuck-up. Just watch somebody pregnant from it. Just watch.
Or he's getting back to training. I mean, this has been a long, drawn-out PED failure, I feel like, too. When did he pop? July? It's been 4 months. We still don't know what the deal is.
Yeah, that's...
Is that July? August?
Oh, the fight was July 29th.
Right, okay.
So, look, his team is trying to figure every fucking loophole in the world they can on this thing, and I'm guessing on some level USADA and the UFC are as well. I'm sure everybody's like, well, if nobody really wants him to be gone for 4 fucking years here. So we'll see. Look, he's going to get away with it, because of course he is. Look at how the world is right now. Of course John Jones gets away with this. There's no justice anymore.
Do you think there should be?
Do I think there should be justice?
No, I mean, do you think he should get 4 years? Like, in this instance, do you think he should get 4 years? Is that the right thing?
Oh, he should get whatever the maximum is at this point. He's so
far. Should be 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, look, you fucking fail back-to-back steroid tests like this? Come on, man. Plus, and just looking at the rest of his history also, what's the point? What's the fucking point? Just let him hit bottom. Help him get there. Sometimes you gotta just kick the guy down the cliff.
Another guy who always makes a lot of news is Conor McGregor. He's been doing some press for his upcoming documentary called Conor McGregor Notorious. He was talking about options for his next fight, and McGregor said, I've got everyone clawing at me, trying to get at me, and that's from multiple sports, multiple organizations, multiple everything. It's been like that for a long, long time, I feel, so it's just another day for me. I know there are many contenders in the UFC. There are many boxing contenders as well. What interests me is certainly a UFC bout, certainly a defense of my lightweight title. There's a fighter with the interim lightweight belt. I feel that will be next. We'll see how negotiations go. So essentially he's saying he's got options, but he's leaning towards Ferguson next.
He's a faggot.
Ferguson or Connor?
Connor.
And do you mean it like he's a homosexual or he's
a burnsome bundle of sticks?
Oh, okay.
I was tying it into his proclivity for the word.
I understand.
I hope somebody does. Otherwise, I'm just sitting here, the weirdo, just yelling faggot for no reason. Everybody's like,
yeah.
Okay, yeah, this podcast got awkward all of a sudden.
Masvidal dropped it today, too, when he was yelling at Bisping.
Wow. Oh. Like, honestly, people, in that one, I don't give a fuck. If you're getting in a fucking fist fight with somebody, you're allowed to say any fucking words you want. You can just say anything at that point. You can drop the N-bomb. You can just anything. You're going to get in a fight with somebody. What's the fucking point of being polite? You're not going to get any points. Society's not going to... That's not going to be the worst thing you do in that moment. Society's not going to be like, you shouldn't have said that word as you're bleeding on the ground having conquered a foe or something.
Right. What do you see? Do you see Connor taking the Ferguson fight next, or is he going to try for Nate again? What's your hunch?
My hunch is Nate, for reasons we've said before, and also because of probably something you'll bring up later.
Okay.
If I'm
not
right.
Sure.
I don't know if you are. I don't know if you saw the leak.
What are we talking about?
Oh, I think it was Saturday or Sunday or Monday. I don't know. One of these days recently. Just one of the past 7. There was accidentally leaked, apparently on the UFC's Instagram account or something, a poster for Diaz McGregor 3.
I think that was fake.
Oh, fuck me. God.
I think.
Damn it.
I saw something about a fake poster. I didn't really read that closely.
Cocksucking fucking Russian.
I think I saw somebody retweet something that somebody put up my poster I made or something. Ha ha ha. Like that sort of thing. But I didn't really follow up on it.
That sounds like Russian talk to me, yeah.
It could be. It could be. They're really infiltrating America.
$150,000, man. The most efficient fucking spenders in the planet.
So anyway, we're talking Ferguson, but the other thing McGregor has said in a couple of these interviews he's been doing is that he wants basically to be a true partner and promoter if he's going to make a return to the UFC. Do you see them upending their business model for him?
Maybe. I think that he's honestly, I think there's a, he's got a strong damn case that, not that I don't think he'll ever get ownership of a company, but I think that he's earned the right to probably get 50-50 promotional money on these shows going forward. Just because he's got the leverage. Like, he's shown, look, I can go to boxing, I can make a fuckload of money. So for me, we're changing shit. And I think everybody will go along with it because he's such an outlier. Now, the only danger would be, the only other person who would ever been even close would have been Ronda, and now she can't do that because she's terrible. It's just because she's just going to be, how is she not going to hashtag Me Too? Come on, Ronda. Actually, yeah, she probably has been. Anyways, that got awkward at the end. yeah, Connor, he's going to get a lot of money.
He said, we're in the contract negotiation stage. They've got to entice me now because I came from a billion-dollar fight. I want equity. I want pay-per-view. I want to be a true partner. You have to entice me now. I want to be a partner. I want to be a promoter, and I want to be a fighter for me to continue. So that's the latest on Connor. He wants more money.
Yeah,
even though he's worth $250 million or whatever it is.
Have you seen how Conor McGregor lives his life? He's going
that
to
seems
need,
rather lavish.
He's gonna need more money. He just, you know, this dumb bastard is just like about a bad 9 months away from having nothing.
Okay, let's see.
I saw, what else I saw one of the quotes. He says, like, my employees have employees. I'm like, why? Like, I understand you need a camp around you. You're going to need people having your own chef and things like that. I kind of get that. But Muhammad Ali didn't need a fucking team of people. Like, you just have to talk trash and beat people up.
Right.
Then you have you have a manager, and they do all the other shit for you. And then they make the money because that's what they do.
He started a couple of businesses. Holy, I know he's got like that. What's that?
New Star Wars commercial. And there's Luke was inside of the Millennium Falcon, it looked like. Oh.
I have no idea what that even means.
What's wrong with you?
I don't know.
Alright, anyways.
I actually have a joke about Star Wars, and I intentionally mix up Star Wars and Star Trek just to piss people off. It's a good gimmick. Like, I don't know, is that Captain Kirk or Klingons? It is irksome to people who really like Star Wars, I find.
I don't think it bothers people as much anymore. Like, at one time I think it did, because it was kind of like, hey, you dorks, nobody really knows these things, but now everybody knows Star Wars and Star Trek.
Right.
Like, it's still part of the mainstream now. It's like, you're the weirdo.
I know, but that's what makes it even better. It's a sophisticated joke. You wouldn't understand. Mark Hunt's back in the news. He was recently pulled from that show, I want to say is it Auckland? Somewhere down under, New Zealand, Australia, one of those, because he did an interview where he said his speech was slurred and couldn't remember things. So the UFC pulled him from this card. And wanted him to basically
so glad
do like
they did that. I love that they says, "Oh yeah, Mark, fuck you. You want to play games? Guess what? We don't really need you."
So it's kind of complicated. Like, Hunt did that interview, and then got pulled from the card. Said he didn't know why. So Dana White wrote an open letter to the Daily Telegraph. And explained his reasoning for not letting Hunt in the fight. White said his team asked Hunt to fly to Las Vegas to get tests done at the Lou Ruvo Brain Center, and Hunt refused. White cited the column in which Hunt said he was slurring words and can't remember things he did yesterday. How can I put a guy with these symptoms he said he's experiencing immediately back into the octagon without additional tests? I definitely wasn't going to do that, so I did the only thing I could do, which is to pull him off an event that would have him fighting just 9 weeks after writing his piece so he can have the proper time to see a specialist. Hunt claims he didn't want to fly to Vegas for the test, so he asked if he could just do them in Sydney. Hunt said the UFC told him he could, and that's what he did, and then they still wouldn't let him fight.
I mean, you fucking told everybody that you can't remember things. And the whole time you've been bitching and moaning about how much the UFC's hurting you physically, and everybody in the world is like these evil, big, rich corporations. They just want to work people to death, and they don't care, and they're just going to kill these guys, concussions, and blah, blah, blah. It's like, what do you want them to do? We want them to take care of the fighters. This is what it looks like if they take care of the fighters. If you come out and say, I can't remember my name, they're going to be like, well, you probably shouldn't be fighting anymore there, pal. This shows how much brain damage he's got that he thought this was going to work.
Well, he also currently has a lawsuit out against the company based on the Brock Lesnar fight where Lesnar popped. So the whole thing is a mess. And, I mean, to a degree, Hunt probably does have a point. He's fought a lot of guys who were using steroids. And looking at Hunt, he passes the eye test. You wouldn't look at Hunt and think, oh, this guy's juicing. So, I mean, he does have an argument, but at the same time, I understand the UFC's perspective here. They've got a guy who's suing them currently working for them, which is weird. And then on top of it, he's saying he's basically got brain trauma and wants to fight. I wouldn't let him fight either.
I mean, what he's saying is kind of like it's just a variation of the whole, when the doctor asks, can you see? And everybody knows, so I just say, I can't see. And they'll say, oh, the fight's over. And you'll be like, no, I still want to fight. It's just this weird way to, like, kind of get out of it. So what I'm saying is that Mark Hunt is apparently a coward.
Hunt says there's 3 fights left on his contract. He either wants to fight or he wants to be compensated for those fights. Hunt says they've got 3 fights to honor. Either pay me out of the contract or give me the 3 fights.
Do you know how fucking awesome that is? Remember how Mark Hunt's time at the UFC started? They wanted to buy him out of the fights, and he said, no, I want to fight him out myself. And now he wants to end it with him saying, hey, just buy me out.
Yeah. He basically wants to do – he's asking for the 3 fights, and then he'll move on. But you know what? For the UFC, they might be better off just buying him out. I think he's got a flat rate of like $800,000. And I mean, granted, that's a lot of money if you're going to pay somebody and they're not going to fight. Like, I don't even know how Hunt got that deal. He must have signed that up at just the perfect time or something. But,
I don't think they have to buy him. They just cut him.
Is he coming off a win or a loss?
I'm sure he is. Oh, no, he beat Derek Lewis.
Oh, that's right.
But he's still, I'm sure they can just cut him.
At this point, like, don't you feel like you might be better off just paying him to go away? Fight in Ryzen and...
I would say the contract is suspended because you admitted that you have brain damage.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's another factor. What if he gets hurt or gets knocked out? How's that going to look?
If I'm the attorney for the UFC, like, I'm telling them flat out, you can't do this. I would never let him fight again in the UFC, just legally. Right. I would never let it happen. Frank, if I'm any other promoter in the world, I would never let him fight because this is, you have no plausible deniability. You have nothing. You have nothing. This is like when Tommy Morrison got AIDS. Even if he didn't have AIDS, like even if all those tests were right and he didn't have AIDS, nobody's going to take that chance ever. So sorry, Mark, you just ended your career because you admitted you can't see things rightly in your head. Fuck, I fucked it up.
So if you were to say you weren't going to let him fight again, how does that work? Do they have to pay him those 3 fights? Like, how has that worked out? You just work out a deal, a severance package?
I have no idea.
We can't let you fight in the condition you're in. We'll give you half of it. See you later. Does that sound good? Go fight wherever you want. I don't know how, because it would be kind of unprecedented. no guy has ever been in this situation where they basically confessed of brain damage while they have a contract and a fight scheduled. Like, this is a unique circumstance.
Yeah, I don't know. You'd have to see the language in the contract, what happens in the situation.
Right.
Because it's one of those gray areas where it's like one thing if, the fighter's, unable to fight or doesn't want to train or something like that. You're just like, okay, we all understand, you don't want to do it or something. But this is rare where you have a fighter who's just got he's got a career-ending injury, but not. Usually if your career's over because of an injury, it's because your knee doesn't work or something, and there's no disputing, you're not going to fight again. You can't walk. You've lost an eye or something. But,
well, he's definitely not going to get an office job like Chuck Liddell or Matt Hughes.
Not anymore, although who knows? We'll probably get hired by UFC Australia. I don't know if they got rid of all those satellite offices. One will take him. I guarantee. Oh, one FC would love to have him.
In other news, we're not going to quite get into UFC 217 yet, but the New York State Athletic Commission is making some noise again. Obviously, UFC 217 is in New York at MSG. They have a new executive director named Kim Sumbler, and she is admitting that critics of the commission weren't wrong, which to me sounds pretty good on the surface. I mean, obviously, it's going to take some time and see how it plays out, because New York, if you remember, has had quite a few fuck-ups over the last last 12 months. They had Kelvin Gastelum paying him off to, he didn't make weight, and then he wasn't going to be allowed to fight again for 6 months unless he paid a fine. He paid a fine, and they just ignored that 6-month suspension. And they had some different rules and stuff. There was the Pearl Gonzalez breast implant thing. She weighed in, made weight, the fight was on, and then they said she couldn't fight because she had implants. Then they decided she could fight, and prior to that, women had fought in New York with implants. There's just been a whole lot of...
There was Daniel Cormier, Towelgate.
Towelgate's a good one. The Chris Weidman, Vigard Musasi timeout finish thing. So there's been some issues here.
They're right up there with Texas. They're real special as far as fucking up.
In a short amount of time, too. It hasn't been a smooth year. And, I mean, I guess you can argue they never had MMA. It was banned forever, and this is their first year as a commission. There's going to be some screw-ups. But there are some high-level screw-ups here where they were kind of hard to miss.
The only one that I would excuse because they've never done MMA, you could argue, is the Weidman and Musasi thing, because that's in the cage and what's actually happening. It doesn't make any sense because those are all regular referees and know what they're doing. The other stuff though is administrative. Is they right. They've had boxing before, they've had weigh-ins. They should be able to figure out how a weigh-in works. So they're just stupid.
This new director, Sumbler, said, "There were mistakes all around there. We learned from it. We changed our policy. We're making sure that not only does the fighter," and this is in regards to weigh-ins, "not only does the fighter not touch the towel, but nobody else touches the towel except commission staff. As you noticed, it was not commission staff who held the towel at the Cormier fight." So they're admitting they screwed up the towel thing. She went on, "It was trial by fire. We got thrown into the pit of snakes. We had the spotlight on us. We had every eyeball on this whole community on us. We were the last state to regulate. Every eyeball was on us, waiting for us to slip up. That was hard to take. But again, I have to go back and say they weren't wrong. A lot of these criticisms, the people who criticize us weren't wrong. So there's nothing wrong with speaking your mind."
This is going to be one of those things where when they look back in 100, 200 years, they're going to be like, what a weird fucking rule. Because it's now a law. It is now a law. In the Ministry of Law in the state of New York, as to who is allowed to hold a towel. And I understand what they're getting at, but it's like, look at the weird minutiae that's involved in this. All you have to say is, don't lean on the fucking towel. You don't need a law. I mean, I guess somebody's got to say it now because people are morons, but do we really need a law for this? Nobody could just look at it and be like, hey, get your hand off the fucking towel. Everybody in the fucking world, everybody on Twitter's like, he's got his hands on the towel. He's right there, his hands on the fuck. Don't you guys know how this works? It's the only trick in the book for weighing in. There's no other tricks. That's the one. And he pulled it on you, morons. Fuck, you're incompetent. I'm glad that none of them listen to this.
At the same time, the New York State Athletic Commission has approved an instant replay policy for MMA ahead of UFC 217, which you know is going to come into play. It just has to.
Yeah, they probably won't let somebody use it this time.
Sumbler said, "We looked at what happened in the Musasi fight. We realized that we need to be very clear on how and when instant replay could be used." And apparently, the rules they're putting into effect are similar to the ABC policy, and it will only be for fight-ending sequences. The in-ring referee will be able to view the replay to determine the correct outcome of the bout. It can only be used after the fight is over and before the official announcement has been given. The bout cannot be restarted regardless of what the replay shows.
None of this has anything to do with what fucking happened, which was just, well, steroid McSteroid face didn't know what he had done. And nobody oh my gosh. Oh, I'm just talking to do something incredible on Saturday. It's gonna be awesome. I'm gonna be so happy to see it live when it's just like a commissioner just like accidentally drops their pen in the cage and it stabs someone and they're like, no, that doesn't care. That's fair. That's part of the rules we have here.
Per the policy, the in-ring referee is the only one able to view the replay, but he or she can consult with the alternate ref about a decision. I don't know how you do that. Like, you watch the video, then you tell someone else what you saw, and they tell you how to rule on it, but whatever.
The alternate ref is watching the fight, but he's got those blinders on like horses have when they go racing, so he can't see the screens in the arena.
Yeah. Even the in-ring referee remains the only person able to give a final decision on the results of the fight. So basically, if there's a questionable finish, like, were you knocked out and you were, you know, you had both hands down and both feet down or something, you took a knee, kind of like Weidman did, and you got knocked out from it, they could go back and look at it and determine if it was a legal blow, and then I guess you could rule it a no contest, but you can't restart the fight under any circumstance. So you're basically, the fight's over, but you can change what the result is, I guess.
I'm just going to keep losing it. I'm just going to lose my fucking mind.
Why?
It's because, like, none of them understood what really fucked Weidman. Like, the fight wasn't stopped by Weidman. He didn't tap, and what's-his-face didn't stop the fight because he thought it was over. He stopped it because he thought it was an illegal knee. And then he decided that it wasn't an illegal knee and said, okay, the fight's over now. I have no idea why. Weidman's like, no, I'm willing to fight. Let's go. You stopped it, ref. I don't know why. Like, if the referee says stop, the fighters have to stop. So right. He said stop. So this is around like, all right. Weidman's like, you said to stop fighting, so I stopped fighting. But I'm ready to fight now. Can we do with this?
Right.
But this is great that they're just going to make it even more complicated for these people.
In general,
I like the whole, like, the referee's decision is final. Like, who else would make the decision?
I know, that part is pretty stupid.
Like, why do we have appeals to the commission? The commissioners can make a decision. That's the final decision. We're going to have the fucking, Dana White's going to make the decision? Joe Rogan, they just flip a coin?
That would be pretty good.
And the winner of the fight is heads. Huh. Big fantastic. That's what they call me.
It's not your best work. Speaking
in this era, that's probably not the right way to insult a woman. We just gave carte blanche to whores. Like, every whore now can just be like, ah, I was pressured into it. Now, some of you are just whores. Like, there are just whores out there.
Yeah, there are people who like to bang people. It's a thing, yeah. Just don't bang anyone famous with power. Then you'll be okay, I guess. People who are not doing okay is Raquel Pennington. She was being earmarked for the next bantamweight title fight against Amanda Nunes at UFC 219. But she was in a car accident. The fight hadn't been announced yet, but it seemed like it was getting pretty close. It was probably going to be the headliner for the December 30th card, because there's still really no main event for that show. But according to Combate, Pennington reportedly just suffered a car accident in Colorado on October 25th and suffered a leg injury that will keep her from accepting the fight. As far as what that means for the rest of the show, I don't know.
I just realized it's that magazine is pronounced Combate.
Is it really?
Yeah, because
my Spanishing it up, it should be Portuguese.
Yeah, when I looked at it, you used to always say Combate. Also, I'm like, wait a second. In jiu-jitsu, when the match starts, they say combate, means fight.
Oh, there you go. Cool.
That was Portuguese with Mike here at halfguarded.com.
Right now, UFC 219, they've got Cruz versus Rivera, Condit versus Magny. I think that's about it. Oh, that's the show they just added the Khabib and Edson Barboza fight, too. So that's on there.
Oh,
but
okay.
None of those are headliners.
No. Cody Garbrandt or T.J. Dillashaw, whoever wins, the UFC is going to say they should be fighting on the show, but since they won't be available, they're going to have an interim title fight with Cruz and Jimmy Rivera. And since Conor's still not back and Tony Ferguson's not ready, I'm just saying that this is going to be a double title fight pay-per-view.
Yeah, you could do Khabib versus Barboza for the interim lightweight title.
You know, we're joking about this shit, but that Cruz and Rivera one sounds pretty fucking plausible to me.
If one of them gets hurt, maybe. Yeah, if whoever wins the fight comes out with like a nasty injury or something. Yeah.
I mean, Max Holloway won an interim title for a belt that was an interim title the day before.
True. Very true. So anyway, Pennington had a shot at the title, but that might be
the UFC had though. Three featherweight champions within a 12-month span, and none of them ever lost.
Yeah, it's a weird time. We're living in the era of Trump.
He's fucking awesome. Like, this has got to be what it was like the summer of '69. This has got to be what it was like.
This is so weird, because now I'm seeing a story. I'm trying to figure out what actually happened to Rocky Pennington here. And I'm seeing another headline. Oh, here we go. I got it. All right. So this is Pennington. It happened 4 days ago. I was on my yearly hunting trip with my uncles and cousins.
Of course, you have a yearling hunting trip.
We were hunting that morning and coming down from the mountain in our side-by-sides, which I guess are like ATVs, I don't know. It was snowing, and when we went to turn, the side-by-side flipped. It threw me out the side the same time it was flipping, and the roll cage caught my leg and pinned me. My cousin fell out the driver's seat on top of me, crawled out the window, and lifted it the best he could so I could drag myself out. They rushed me to the hospital, and thank God for my tall hunting boots, because it protected my leg from fully shattering. Which if that had happened, I would have to get my lower leg amputated. Also, where my bone is broken is the main nerve to your foot. Luckily, the feeling came back and I passed the test. Otherwise, I would have dropped foot, never being able to control my foot again. My calf is totally smashed in. I had an MRI of my knee and lower leg. They were worried I tore everything. If I tore from behind the knee, they can fix it, but the results came back and calf is just smashed bad. Should recover, and in time the nerves will repair. So 3 to 4 month recovery. So it wasn't a car crash. He was in an ATV and flipped it, I guess.
It's like a mini car crash. But yeah. It's, I mean,
That doesn't sound good. That does not sound pleasant.
It's weird. The whole time you're talking about this, I'm like, I hear stories like this a lot. It's always baseball players. It's always baseball players. Some assholes is always rolling an ATV or something, I'm always thinking, like, because they're always getting in trouble for it, because they all have those clauses in their contract where they're not allowed to do things like this. Like, you know, real athletes, sorry, UFC guys, but real athletes, they can't play basketball and stuff. Like, yeah. Nobody wants them doing that. And I saw that one time with soccer, and somebody's like, he should be playing basketball. And one of the coaches is like, yeah, I would never want to play basketball. Jump, all that jumping and exercising like that, that's not good for you on your off days. I'm like, oh, well, they really take this shit seriously. But anyways, I realize it's because baseball players, especially all the white ones, they're all hicks. And right. Rocky Pennington, she's just a hick. She's just white trash riding around in ATVs in the snow hunting. And she's a woman? But that's only trash does that. Like, your dad's not an investment banker if he's hunting in the snow with his lesbian cage-fighting daughter. Like, that guy doesn't have an active 401k portfolio or whatever it would be.
Isn't it weird how different that is than, like, the rich, like, Wall Street guys who fly to Africa and, like, shoot the lions and elephants and shit?
It's all fucking just... Well, those guys, I feel, are... the difference is... The first kind, they grow up with it.
Right.
And the rich guys doing it are just pure evil. Like, they're just like, they're literally looking for some sort of new thrill. They've done all the drugs, they fucked all the girls. The only thing they have left, not even about hunting, they gotta hunt something special. That's somebody longing for something in life.
I can't imagine flying halfway across the world to, like, kill animals. Like, it's so bizarre.
Cool. Like, I can actually understand it if it was some deal where, like, they flew over there and it was a bear, because it would be like, you see bears all over the place here, so it'd be like, this has got to be like a challenging bear or something. But, like, you're going to hunt animals that you've never seen before except for in zoos because they're so awesome. And, like, when you see a giraffe, your first reaction should not be, fuck, I can't wait to shoot it. It should be, holy shit, a giraffe. You just want to sit there and look at it for a while. Be like, look at that. This neck's really long. It's just walking around wild. It's a giraffe. Look at that, a lion. Okay, if it's a lion, you might think about shooting it. But the giraffe, you'd be like, yeah, I just saw some asshole. He shot a giraffe, and he stood there with his foot on the neck, and I'm like, it was so really weird. Because every other time they killed these animals, they kind of got, like, an animal look. You know, they all kind of, like, bears and dogs and all that. They all have, like, the same basic shape. But a giraffe got that big-ass long neck, and it's just so weird and rare. I'm like, you just fucking kill the giraffe, you asshole. Like, you watch it fall down, and its neck just flop and bounce back and forth, and it's going to look like a cartoon. You dick.
Yeah, it's not something I'm going to be doing anytime soon.
I mean, hunting is... This is actually one of those things. It's a really good... I've ranted about this in the past. I know I have. But my friend Meg, she got married back in 2015 or 14? 15, 14? 15.
Couple years
ago.
2015.
Yeah, and she got married, like, the weekend after Thanksgiving. Because, like, she'd been with her husband for, like, 5 years. They had, like, a kid and stuff. Like... This is just kind of like, we're just doing this, we're having like a get-together type of deal. But there's like a real reception and all that. And his family, we actually at one point, like a couple of the family members were like, we don't think we can make it. That's the first weekend for hunting. And I'm like, you're going to miss your brother's fucking wedding because you want to go hunting? And it's just the first weekend? There's lots of other weekends for you to go murder shit for fun, but you gotta be out there on that. You would miss a once in a lifetime opportunity to go murder something. What the fuck is wrong with you people?
Yeah.
I hate hunting. I hate it.
I'm not into it either. I don't get it. I'm not an outdoorsy type, if you couldn't tell, but it's like, I have no interest in going, sitting in the woods for a couple days, trying to track down an animal, shoot it, watch it die, and then drag it back to my pickup truck. Like, that is not appealing to me at all. Like,
I can see thinking it'd be cool to track an animal.
And then do what? Like,
just the thrill of tracking it. But I don't want to kill it.
Yeah,
just a challenge. Be like, hey, look at this.
Granted, it's like, I've never done it, and I know some people are obsessed and consider it a sport, but it's like, How is it a sport? You're not even competing against your own species. You're competing against an animal who's defenseless. Like, that doesn't sound like a sport to me.
It's the only sport where the other side doesn't know it's a sport and that the outcome is life and death. Like, that's not like how you play basketball. Like, oh, look at that, LeBron James did not know the game had started and now he's dead.
I agree. I am not a fan of hunting.
I mean, honestly, I'm at the point where if I was a stronger-willed person and had any convictions, I would be a vegan probably.
Yeah, like, I respect vegans. We've talked about it.
And I'm like, you know, even like vegetarian, I'm like, there's really no need for me to kill animals. I'm like, I could eat stuff that tastes good and not kill an animal, but fuck, I love beets. That's why I'm really rooting for them in the labs that are growing beef now. Like, I don't care if even it's only like half as good, and if it costs twice as much, I'll buy that instead. Yeah. Like, I need to stop being a hypocrite about this, but I love meat so much, and I know that all life comes from some sort of lice, and I shouldn't be so religious-y about it. Just eat the meat.
Well, it's amazing, too, because as time goes on, all this stuff is going to change and evolve, and there's going to be supply and demand issues. It's going to change drastically just because of what it's going to cost to raise, you know, livestock and cattle and whatnot. It's like, that's an expensive endeavor. And it's like, we still get beef and stuff pretty cheap here, but the cost and the work involved, it's going to keep the prices going up. It's a lot easier to grow veggies. And as the science evolves and gets better, they're going to be able to make meat in a lab, and you probably won't even know the difference. Granted, we're years away from it, but it's going to happen.
They're going to have to, and I hope they do. I hope they grow everything in a lab, because like, even like farming for people, like, that really does take up a lot of land.
Mm, and resources. Yeah.
Yeah, and resources. So if we just make it in a machine or something, like, I'm fine. I'm okay with that.
Like, yeah.
Seriously, think about this. We have 3D printers are a thing now, so we know that's only going to get better.
Mm.
And if we could just have a machine that literally builds you anything you want, and then another machine that just gives you all the food you want, we're done. We don't need anything. Karl Marx wins. Jesus wins. Everybody wins. Everybody has everything they want. It'll be amazing. We're so close to having utopia. I hope I'm alive.
On the topic of, while we're on the topic of meat, Brandon Moreno received no sanction after failing a USADA drug test due to contaminated meat. Did you hear about this?
I did. I just saw it today, and I immediately thought of you, like, oh, we got a USADA story.
Moreno, who's a UFC flyweight, who I think we both like a lot, seems like a genuine, nice guy. Young guy, I think he's 23, good fighter. He's coming off that loss against Sergio Pettis in Mexico City, but he was on a run there where he won, I want to say, like four fights in a row in the UFC and was looking good. But USADA essentially determined that he ingested, without fault or negligence, trace amounts of clenbuterol, which was found in an in-competition urine test administered in the early hours of August 6th. A subsequent investigation led USADA officials to rule that the trace presence of clenbuterol in Moreno's system very likely resulted from contaminated meat consumed in Mexico. As a result, Moreno will not face a suspension stemming from the failed test. This is... the fourth person in the last 16 months to pop for clenbuterol-tainted meat. Ning Guang Yu, Augusto Montano, and Li Jinglang have all fallen victim to this tainted meat.
Poor Frank Mir. No one believed him.
Well, it's like it's a Mexico and China thing where whatever kind of hormones and shit they're pumping into these cows to make them bigger and have more, you know, meat on their body, literally, shows up in drug tests. Like that sort of thing's scary, man. Like, who knows what the hell we're eating, you know what I mean? It's like, ugh.
I do, but I actually just heard, I think it was Rogan mentioned something, and I don't think he even knew what he was saying. I think he just said like something offhanded and it triggered something in my head. But it was basically the idea, like, yeah, it costs a lot of money to put steroids and stuff into animals.
Right.
And I think he was talking about chickens. I don't know if it applies to cows, but like, apparently the real thing is they just breed them in a certain way. It's like, not like they're not really pumping them full of chemicals so much as they're just stuffing them full of food and breeding them in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But as for Mexico, I don't know. Is this a really weird thing where I think they're, it sounds like they're probably doing the right thing. It's just really fucking weird to think that the Mexican supply of meat has so much steroids in it that it's registering on urine tests. Like, how much is there in there? That's a lot. Because think about, I can't imagine he's eating only beef. You know, he's got, I'm sure they have a varied diet. So it must be just loaded in there. Which tells me I gotta go to Mexico.
You'll be ripped.
Who knew that going to Mexico and eating the Mexican meat is the key to health?
That is like flowing through my brother's veins right now.
Your brother's just angry all the time. Like, I don't know what's into him. He just went to McDonald's and he's just been raging ever since.
USADA claims they are not aware of any instance in which an athlete sample tested positive for clenbuterol after consumption of meat produced in the United States. So it's never happened in America, which kind of speaks well for the USDA and that federal government propaganda machine.
And just for, I think, America in general being a first world country, that probably has something to do with it. But although I will say that USDA is one of those things, like, philosophically I object to it, and I think a lot of abuse has happened with it, but I really don't mind it per se. It's kind of like yeah. It's things like this. I'm like, hey, the food is what it says it is, which is all I really want. If they're gonna put right. If they're gonna put clenbuterol in it, I want to know. Don't yeah. hide that from me. Honest to goodness, I would probably be more likely to buy it just because of this. I'd be like, fuck me, it must be enough of a performance enhancer.
So you don't think food production should be totally hands-off, laissez-faire, somebody should keep an eye on that, you're okay with that?
I do think it should be
totally free market.
No, I think it should, but I don't, like, I'm not gonna really, like, argue hard against it.
Okay. I like it. I couldn't find a good MMA history today thing. I looked and, like, Wanderlei Silva debuted. There wasn't, nothing really good ever happened on November 1st in the world of MMA. So we don't have that this week. But in upcoming fight news, Al Iaquinta must have been raging because he is now out of his fight with Paul Felder at UFC 218. Charles Oliveira will be stepping in on short notice to fight Felder.
How is Oliveira still around?
In Detroit.
He feels like he's fucked up a lot. And I don't know, like, obviously he's missed weight a ton. And he keeps, like, winning and losing.
Yeah, he loses by guillotine a lot, I feel like.
Yeah, and like, he loses when he shouldn't. It's stupid. And then, I don't know if he ever has, but I feel like he's been, like, he's partied with a lot of cocaine. I just feel like he's had trouble outside of the company. Even though I'm pretty sure I've never actually heard anything, but my brain's like, no. I think, yeah. He gets in some shit sometimes. Yeah, for sure.
I feel like he was in like a Street Fight or something for some reason. Not like Street Fighter video game, but like I feel like something, he was in a brawl in Brazil or something, but I might be making that up. I also feel like he wears glasses a lot.
Yeah, and in fashionable clothes. Like, he doesn't wear socks, but he wears gym shoes, and he has like capri pants.
Yeah.
His hair's got a lot of product in it.
Yeah.
And the tank top is kind of tight and European gay looking with like a chain, a gold chain.
I'm not a big fan of his hair.
No, and he's awkward around women, but he's got like that persistence where he just doesn't stop. We now call this sexual assault. It used to be the art of seduction, but like he just goes from one woman to another and they all like, they're not really interested, but he eventually finds one that's just kind of feeling a little fat that day, and that's how he rolls.
Yeah. So anyway, Oliveira's got a fight. I wonder what happened with Raging Al. I think he was drunk and fell down the stairs or something.
Housing crisis.
The market's doing great, Trump says.
Honestly, I have no idea how the stock market works anymore. Like, throughout all of history, it kind of made sense. Now I'm like, I don't know what it's doing. It doesn't seem to care who's president, what's going on in the world. Terrorism doesn't stop it. Recessions don't stop it. Oil doesn't stop it. Trump doesn't stop it. And yet nobody seems to have any money, but the fucking thing keeps going up. I don't know what's happening here. I think I'm supposed to give all my money to them. And then I get it back someday.
Bitcoin, right?
I guess. I don't even... That's a real thing now. How did that work? Like, that's actually establishing itself. Fucking weirdo number coins on your phone. That's working.
I guess, for now. UFC 220 now has a date and location. It's going to be January 20th in Boston. This has led to speculation this will be Conor McGregor's return because there's a lot of...
This has led to speculation that Matt Grady will be in attendance.
No. Well, yeah, I might get there one way or another, but... anywho, the rumors immediately were obviously with the large Irish population in the Boston area, that maybe this will be Conor McGregor's return fight, which I scoffed at immediately because he's not fighting anywhere besides Vegas from now on, correct?
Did they say this was in January?
January 20th, yeah. I mean, the timeline's good.
Conor's going to fight on that Murderers Row weekend when he has to compete with NFL playoffs.
It's weird. Last year they didn't. We should see when the NFC Championship game is. Usually this show
they always piggyback it. Yeah.
It's in, but well, yeah. One year it was on after. I remember they were going head to head with the Patriots game, and that was the show with.
That was Connor's show.
McGregor. Yeah, I was at that show. Which, yeah, I guess. I should see when the championship games are. I can look it up. I think other times it's been the in-between week. You know how the Super Bowl's 2 weeks later usually? Yeah.
I think if they can hit that weekend right before the Super Bowl, I think that's a gold mine of a weekend. I don't know why they always run the Super Bowl weekend. But I love that other weekend. I don't really... First, he's not coming to Boston. No. Vegas. It's going to be Vegas, New York... somewhere in fucking Ireland or Moscow or some weird shit in Europe.
Let's see.
Sorry, everybody in Thackerville. You're not getting Connor.
The Super Bowl is February 5th. Conference champion. Oh, what the hell? It can't be January 20th. It must be January 21st. And the championship game... A Subway ad just loaded right over the date of the game. Thanks a lot, NFL.com.
It'll be 2 weeks before. Super Bowl's on the 5th. Then we go back to the 22nd.
Sunday's the 22nd. So, yeah, it would be the weekend of the championship game. So, I don't know.
I feel like he's also... It's Connor. Like, he's not going to fight in the January. Like, January's not that's not a big sports month. Like, fighting in the UFC's established July and December is their big things. I guess he did do March and August. But, like, in boxing, like, you want that spring-summer stuff. That's, like, you know, Floyd Mayweather. Look at that. Floyd Mayweather would not ever fight in January. Conor ain't fighting in January.
Who knows? He's going to fight when he feels like it seems like to me. You know what I mean? Oh, Jesus. I was looking at 2017 anyway. I was looking at the wrong year. Like, how do you know the Falcons played the Patriots?
You're like, holy shit, football is rigged.
Well, the dates were off. Hang on. God damn it.
Should be February 6th.
You type in NFL playoffs and they give you the results from last year, Google. Fuckers. AFC.
We're really overthinking this.
No, I want to know now. Now I'm pissed.
It should be February 7th for the Super Bowl.
It's February 4th.
I'm just making shit up now.
This is bullshit. January 21st. So, yeah. Okay, so the UFC 220 is on January 20th, and then the championship games are the next day. For everyone who's actually still listening to this.
So you're right anyways.
Good. This weekend we have some fights. Good news, fight fans. It's a Bellator show. It's coming from like Penn State or something weird. The Bryce Jordan Center on Friday night, November 3rd. Believe it or not, this show has two title fights. We've got Ryan Bader defending the light heavyweight title against Linton Vassell.
Are you asking me?
I'm telling you.
Oh, okay. Hooray.
Then in the co-main event, we have Alima Leigh McFarlane against Emily Ducott for the inaugural women's flyweight championship of the Bellator world.
I mean, I'm always thinking there's just not enough title fights available for the women. This is good.
Yeah, I like how Bellator keeps just trying to beat UFC to the punch with these new divisions. Like, they created their featherweight title right before Cyborg won the UFC one, and now they're creating this flyweight title right before the UFC creates one. The one fun fact about McFarlane, are you familiar with her first MMA fight?
She's the one that beat that big fat one.
Yes. She's finally hitting the big time here. There's like this viral video from, I want to say two and a half years ago, where you've got a woman who looks like a real MMA fighter. She's got a rash guard on and is hopping up and down and looks like a fighter. Then across the cage from her is somebody who clearly looks like a soccer mom, probably mid-30s, a little heavier, outweighs McFarlane by, I don't even know how the fight was sanctioned, but she's just like standing there, this soccer mom, like adjusting her gloves, just looks like she's never been in a cage
like
before.
Tough man.
Even though she was 0-3 before the fight and McFarlane was 0-0, like I want to see her debut fight, but anyway, just got wrecked. Like she came in just swinging, flailing like two women who have never fought would do, just kind of windmill punches, and McFarlane just rocks her with a right, drops her down to two knees, and then just clocks her right on the chin, knocks her out cold, this other woman face plants, and the fight's waved off. But it went viral because, like, I forget where it was, but the commission took a lot of shit. I think it was California. And California ended up launching some sort of investigation for this match, which was, I believe, unsanctioned. And it was a viral thing a couple of years ago. But basically, the woman who won that fight is now 6-0 as a pro and has won 5 fights in a row in Bellator. So that's amazing. She got signed to Bellator after defeating that soccer mom. But she's won 5 in a row and is now getting a title shot in a division that never existed until last week.
It just shows that when you look at MMA, it's not really a sport. It is promotion. Because something like this only happens in the world of fighting. Like, if this was Sean Gannon this happened with.
Mm.
You know, it seemed like somebody becomes like, gets a little bit of like stardom in some weird way, and everybody kind of pays attention, and then they get, you know, onto the big leagues. Like, you would never see this in a real sport. There's nobody playing in, like, the minor leagues of baseball. And he's like, everybody's like, look at this guy. He holds the bat the wrong way. Now, he's only batting 250. But look at him. He's doing something no one's ever seen before. I'd be like, come look at the Wonder Kid. You'd be like, yeah, okay, yeah, but he sucks. But if it's in the MMA, you'd for sure bring him up. Like, look at the guy. Look at him batting the other way. Step right up. One nickel gets you one look, but don't look too long. Otherwise, you'll go blind because he holds the bat the wrong way.
I'm just surprised this hasn't been, I mean, granted it's Bellator, but still a title fight. Nobody, you never hear anybody talk about this woman. Like, nobody would know she was the woman who beat up the soccer mom. And I'm just surprised because I discovered this today when I was looking at the fight. And it's like, if I didn't even know it, it's like, Nobody does. You know what I mean?
Oh, like 50 people in the underground do.
Maybe.
And that's who's like, that's who's giving them feedback, because they're the only ones giving them feedback on a fucking show for a division that doesn't really exist. Like, nobody, most people don't even know that there are women in Bellator. And all of a sudden they're having a new division which doesn't exist anywhere else, and they're going to have their title fight, and it's going to be the day before the return of George St. Pierre in Madison Square Garden. Yeah, it's probably a lot of reasons no one paying attention to this shit show.
Well, I'm looking forward to see how McFarlane does. She looked really good against the soccer mom.
So do I.
Phil Davis versus Leo Leite. Leo Leite does not have a Wikipedia page.
I think he was in the UFC. Like in fucking Brazil, like Ultimate Fighter Brazil or some shit.
I'm not going to SureDog to look for him. I'm sorry.
Honestly, no one gives a shit.
Zach Freeman versus Saad Awad.
Saad Awad. I don't know why he always sticks out in my head for some reason.
I just like the how his name flows. And then in the opener, we've got Ed Ruth versus Chris Dempsey. So they've got two Penn State grads, former, you know, NCAA championship wrestlers on the card with Phil Davis and Ed Ruth. Ruth is fighting at middleweight, which might be a first. I think he always fought light heavyweight. I can't find out because...
Because you have a lot of tabs open.
No, the tabs aren't. I close them as I go. We're more than halfway done. We're doing good. And now we're on to UFC 217. This Saturday.
And the crickets goes wild.
November 4th. Like, cricket's been alive a long time down here.
You must have food laying out.
I don't. There's no food in the basement down here. Nobody actually ever comes. This is like the office. Nobody ever comes in here, ever.
Yeah, they might not. If you had two boys, somebody would definitely take it over. But I don't know how, like, a girl works.
She's not taking any of the rooms over yet, but it'll probably happen eventually. They've got, like, a playroom down here that they never use anyway. Yeah, the cricket's annoying. Hey, yesterday I came home from work, and the Puggle, I'm not sure what happened. Have you ever been in a situation where you get home and you can't tell if the Puggle peed or puked all over your rug? Like, it was a really dark yellow, and there were, like, three, like, really large stains. One was probably, I don't know, like the size of a pie tin, and then there were a couple smaller ones in the same vicinity all around, like, the houseplant in my bedroom. It's really weird.
Sam doesn't... Like, whenever something happens, if he pukes, it's going to be, like, wherever he's at. But if he's going to piss or shit in the house, like, it's going to be by the door. And it's always going to be my fault for not letting him out.
Yeah. It was so dark, I think it was puke, and she probably ate it again and maybe puked it up another time or something. That's my theory.
They're not the brightest animals.
No, they suck. November 4th, UFC 217, Madison Square Garden. Mr. Mike Coughlin, you will be in attendance, correct?
That's right.
Are you taking the shittiest airline possible there?
No, I'm taking United.
Oh.
It's New York.
Spender.
Chicago to New York is, that's like the only thing United seems to do. They do it like 5 billion times a day. Like, there's no cheap discount flights.
Any concerns you might have to be forcibly removed from the plane?
Kind of.
Okay.
I'm kind of curious how this whole terrorism thing works. Like, I've never really been in a city.
What?
Well, because there's just been a fucking major terrorist attack in Manhattan.
No, I understand.
I've never been in a city like that's on like a terrorist lockdown like that.
When you're recording a podcast and you say, I'm not sure how this whole terrorism thing works, it sounds a little off.
I hope somebody in the NSA is listening. I want to expand our listenership.
You know what's funny? I'm so screwed up. When you say NSA, I immediately start thinking Nevada State Athletic Commission. And I start picturing, what the hell's that lady's name with the glasses? Lundvall. Pat Lundvall. That's what I think of when someone says NSA. Anyways, in the main event, we have the long-awaited return of George St. Pierre after a four-year layoff. He is coming in to fight Michael Bisping, moving GSP will be moving up a division up to 185 to, you know, possibly become one of the only guys to hold two titles in two different divisions in the UFC. There's
actually,
been a lot
this
of
point, we're getting to like the fourth or fifth guy to do it.
I know,
kind of losing some of the specialness.
Well, out of how many hundreds of shows have they done? In thousands.
But you only
of
have
fights.
To really look at out of how many champions they've had.
Well, this year, do we count interims? There's been at least like 40 or 50 champions this year, right?
That's the problem. The interim thing really does throw a monkey wrench in the idea that a title means anything at all. Somebody made a joke about that. There's somebody, one of the fighters, somebody's bitching and moaning about their slot or whatever, and they just said like, well, you know, it was Bisping. It was Bisping talking about Whitaker's belt. He goes, he's got the interim title, which I know why they have for pay-per-views, but nobody thinks that's real. I'm like, okay, they all know the score.
There's been a lot of talk about this fight and how well it's going to draw, and obviously the last couple days, the promotion, and what kind of interaction Bisping and GSP have. And I know GSP's, I think tomorrow he's doing that ESPN car wash deal where he hits up every show and... like to me, GSP's kind of boring when he promotes. He just comes off like a nice guy with a heavy French accent or French Canadian, whatever you want to call that. So a lot of the fight build is going to be based on Bisping and if he can get under George's skin and can draw people in, which Bisping is pretty good at that. I mean, he's never been a huge, huge draw, but he's never fought a GSP either. I guess the big question is, what does the name GSP mean in 2017 after a four-year layoff? He basically missed the Ronda era, the Connor era, where the sport grew even more than when he was on top. So there's a theory that a lot of current UFC fans, the people who have been helping make these 1.5 million buy shows, don't even know who GSP is. I question that. I don't really believe that. I think the show will do well. It's in New York. It's got a very strong undercard. I think the show overall will do fine. As far as the fight itself, I kind of like Bisping. It kills me to say that because I was, you know, the number one GSP supporter during his whole run. I think he's the greatest fighter of all time. I've said that, but I think Bisping's just too big. And I don't know if George is going to be as fast and explosive and be able to get that takedown against a bigger guy whose wrestling has improved drastically over the years.
Yeah, there's a lot of variables at play here with old Georgie. He's bigger, for sure. He says he's gotten used to the weight. We'll see. But, I mean... I don't know how St. Pierre wins unless his wrestling is like, it's obviously he's a great wrestler, and he's taking down people that he shouldn't take down, sure, but it's not like he took down Johnny Hendricks like 8,000 times, like he was just God pushing people over, like he had to work for takedowns still. And Bisping's a real big dude, he's way bigger than St. Pierre,
right?
And St. Pierre ain't getting takedowns. On his feet, he's going to be smaller. It's not like either one of their power punchers, but St. Pierre never has been, and he's going to be facing a guy who's got a way bigger reach, who's a good striker, and whose cardio will not be affected at all. Like St. Pierre has no idea what's going to happen. He's going to have to go out there and be a little timid, I bet. I bet he's a little unsure of himself. He's not sure how my body handle all this extra weight. How will I get more tired in a return like this because I've never been off this long? Will I get tired fighting a guy who's much bigger? So I can see St. Pierre being very passive early on and not pressing things. And I think Bisping's going to win this thing. It's just because he's not going to stop. He's just going to be like, fuck me, there's little midgets in here with me. I'm just going to push them around. I think this is the reason size matters, man. That's what they all tell you.
I agree. It's intriguing, but it's like both guys are older. Bisping looked like shit against Dan Henderson, I thought. Like, how do you get your ass kicked that bad against 46-year-old Dan Henderson? Bisping's got one eye. like this fight could go either way. I don't know. I really don't know. And Bisping hasn't fought that recently either. And obviously
he's got a horseshoe up his ass.
GSP has obviously been off for 4 years. There's going to be ring rust. Like you said, he's going to carry around more weight. He's not used to fighting at this weight. He's never fought at 185 in his career.
He's not used to fighting.
Right. The whole thing is bizarre. But at the same time, it's like, I feel like GSP is a smart guy. He's got Faraz and that camp, and usually he knows what he's doing, and he has a game plan, and whether he has the most exciting fights doesn't really matter. He usually knows how to win, and he does it. And he beat every guy in the welterweight division, and it wasn't even really close. But the one thing I remember in some of those last fights, you mentioned...
How about Jake Shields?
You mentioned Johnny Hendricks, but... was like he started having trouble getting the takedowns after that first ACL surgery. Like I remember guys like Condit stopped a couple of takedowns. Nick Diaz just threw him aside on a couple of takedowns, I can remember. And like there were chinks in the armor. Then you had the Hendricks fight where it was like it would have been easy for that decision to go the other way and Hendricks winning the title, and he was already on the decline 4 years ago. I don't know how he's going to do after 4 years off coming up in weight against Bisping. But at the same time, Bisping's not that good, and GSP asked for this fight. This was the fight GSP wanted. Why does he know something we don't know? There's a lot of questions. There's a lot of questions.
The one thing that I think is really true about GSP, and you kind of touched on there, is the idea that he always has a game plan.
Right.
And I think what makes GSP so successful is, when he can adapt game plans here and there. He's just a great fighter, blah, 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 blah. But when he finds a game plan, like, look, there's a way for GSP to beat Bisping. Like, if he beats him, this isn't some, like, this is one in a billion. He could easily just slip inside and be jabbing and light on his toes. Like, I can foresee a GSP victory, and wouldn't be crazy. Which means that there's a way to do it. And St. Pierre, what makes him so great is, he can find that way, and he just sticks to it, and he executes it perfectly, and so he makes these things happen. But I still think that he's just too small. Although, again, Bisping, look, he kind of got lucky with Anderson. He got lucky with Anderson Silva. He got, you know, one punch on Rockhold, and he fought old man Henderson. Like, this is not exactly. It's one of those things where, like, again, if you look at Sherdog, you go, fuck me. But this isn't, like, actually impressive.
Right.
This is a horseshoe up your ass.
Right.
This is Frank Mir territory.
I mean, yeah, you look at his wins since the Rockhold loss. It's CB Dolloway decision. Split decision win against Tullis Latus. The Anderson Silva unanimous decision win, which is questionable. The Luke Rockhold fluke knockout. Like, I think he loses to Rockhold 7 out of 10 times, probably. Then the Dan Henderson fight. Like you said, it's not a good run. I mean, prior to that, he lost to Tim Kennedy. Like, I could see this kind of being an ugly fight, like that Kennedy fight. I mean, GSP is going to have a similar build to Kennedy at 185, yeah. You know?
Maybe GSP will win. You know, maybe I'm talking myself into GSP all of a sudden.
I don't know. It's weird. It's weird. How many guys come back from a 4-year layoff better and move up a weight class and do well?
Has it ever happened? Nobody's ever done what George St. Pierre does, though.
That's true. That's true.
Like, he is a freak, and I think that he left the sport. Whatever it was, GSP's, he's a different dude. Like, the way his brain works is different. I thought it was really fascinating listening to him talking about his ACL surgery, the second one, and he talked about how he had to learn relearned how to jump and walk. Because he's reading and he's talking to all these different therapists and doctors. And, yeah, you know, ACLs are, you get too big of muscles and all that. But there's something about the way that, like, if you jump and land improperly, every time if your foot goes out a little bit, it's putting a little extra pressure on the ACL. And that by just correcting the way that you jump, you can alleviate that pressure, and that makes a big difference. And I'm like, holy shit, like, this dude, he's got this. He's got some badass OCD there. He really does. Like, whatever he's into, he's really into it.
So
if only he could have used his powers for good We probably have a cure for AIDS by now.
Dude, do you have an official pick for this one? Biggest show of the year, biggest fight of the year, probably, right?
Yeah. Unless something really awesome happens. I just did, that's true. I did a podcast just earlier tonight, recorded one with James Swift. He wanted to go over some of these things. And I said Bisping then.
Yeah.
And because it's just bigger, and I figured he's just going to stuff all the takedowns and keep it standing. And he just, again, the size is just too big.
I agree.
But now I'm thinking about crazy-ass OCD GSP versus Bisping, who shows up visibly drunk at press conferences. And it's like, if I was a world champion at something, and the other guy had OCD and looked like a god, would he beat me up? Yeah. So I'm gonna say GSP now, and it's because Bisping, he's starting to see sex. He's not very good.
Right. It's weird.
He lost all those fights.
Like, the question too is what is Bisping's decline like? He's a couple years older than George. He's been in more wars than George. He's getting beat up more than him. Those 4 years George was off, he was just chilling. And in the last 4 years, God, I wonder how many fights Bisping's had. Probably 10 fights. The best middleweights in the world. Let's see.
St. Pierre's still in the zone of being a great athlete. Like, he won't be as great as he was, but when you're a level 10 athlete at 30, yeah, at 35, you've gone down one or two, but you're still an eight, and most people are fours. Like, he's still going to be a great athlete, and he has taken no damage for 4 years at a time when a guy starts to take damage. So he's probably, as fresh as you could almost imagine him to be at his age, and he's still way younger than Bisping.
Ten fights in the last 4 years for Bisping.
Oh, what a man.
We shall see. Any thoughts on what the show does for buys?
I feel like if I was them, I would be shooting for 800.
Yeah.
I feel like if you hit 800, it'd be like, okay, we did 800, but it's like it's a good result.
Mm.
But it's not like a million. Like, a million is like a holy shit. And if it's like 600 or 700, you'd be like, okay. Like, it's not, it wouldn't be great. People like, it's still in this era. But yeah, I think it's, I'll go with 800.
I would have liked to see more promotion based on GSP. Like, I feel like they're still pissed at him. Like, I feel like it kind of shows in the promotion where it's like, this should be a huge historic moment. GSP returning after 4 years, moving up in weight, fighting at Madison Square Garden. And it just doesn't feel like that monumental. I don't know if it's because he's been gone a while and new fans don't know him. But the way the UFC's been promoted, I just haven't seen a lot yet. And the fight's only a couple days away at this point. So it's just the promotion's been a little weird. I watched some of the embedded stuff, but it's like they should be making this one of the biggest moments in UFC history. Their greatest fighter ever. It's never been arrested, never popped for steroids. He's coming back to move up a weight class at 36. Is he still the best in the world? Can he pull this off? And I just don't feel like there's much of that narrative out there right now.
Yeah, I wonder if the fact that he voluntarily walked away for 4 years, if on some level, like, they don't know how to promote that, because it's kind of got that wimp thing. Like, you're like, we expect our fighters to be these big badasses, or, they're cage fighters, and here's a guy's like, guys, he literally said, I need a mental holiday. Like, I just need some me time. Like, we don't expect that out of our fighters. Like, when you combine that with the fact that he looks like a model, and he's so nice and polite, you're like, this guy's kind of fruity. It's kind of, yeah. But I have no idea. I don't know how promoting really works anymore.
Right.
Because I remember when Jones and Cormier fought, there wasn't like this, like, I thought it was billed, but I felt like, it didn't feel like it was as big as it should have been. It was like a 900,000 buy show.
Right.
So this stuff might be out there, and it's just in a different, like, maybe this is the social media era where a lot more of this stuff happens in venues where I'm like, oh, I guess they have been spending their money to secretly promote the fights on Instagram, and we don't know because it's the wild west of advertising.
Yeah, that could be. Obviously, time will tell. overall, this card is really, really good, and I think it's been getting downplayed. In the co-main event, we've got Cody Garbrandt defending the bantamweight title against TJ Dillashaw. They've kind of had a long feud going back to the Team Alpha Male days where Dillashaw, that snake in the grass, left the camp and started training out in Colorado. I think with Elevation, Team Elevation, but I think he's left them and now wants to start his own gym out in California or something, but they do not like each other. Apparently Dillashaw knocked out some training partner and Team Alpha Male's pissed at him and think he's a liar and all this crap. So there's some drama, there's a storyline, they were both coaches on Tough. But to me, what's most intriguing is these guys are both really good bantamweights. Like, if you put aside all the drama and all that bullshit, it's like, these guys are good. Cody Garbrandt destroyed Dominic Cruz, like, just tooled him. Like, he was dancing around, prancing around, knocked him down three or four times, and hardly ever got touched by Cruz, and no one's ever done that to Cruz. And then you got Dillashaw, who's, you know, a former bantamweight champ, very competitive with Cruz, basically ended Henan Barrow's career for all intents and purposes. And this is just a great fight. Personally, I like Garbrandt in the fight. I think his striking is just at another level, and he's going to be the bigger, taller guy with the reach advantage. And to me, Dillashaw kind of fights like Cruz, so if Garbrandt could do that to Cruz, he can probably do it to Dillashaw, who's probably a step behind Cruz as it is.
Yeah, I look at that inside the cage. I do believe that Garbrandt, he's just in that zone, and he's one of the few guys you'll ever see at that, in below basically 155 pounds, that really could just drop a motherfucker with one punch. Mm. He does something that other bantamweights can't do, and I think that it gives a lot of guys problems, because they're not used to that. Like, when they spar, like, you know, they kind of get used to it. All of a sudden, you're like, oh, wait, this is, you know, it's how heavyweights, they have to fight different, because they know one punch really ends it all, and the bantamweights aren't used to that. So we saw, you know, how great Garbrandt did at 207 on the undercard of the Rousey show. This is one of those fights where I understand why it's not doing huge business, because it is 135 pounds, and it does seem like on some level, the smaller the guys get, there's some disconnect from the public. Like, you got to have something extra. But everything he went over, like, this has got all the markings of just, like, this should be the greatest thing anyone's ever seen in MMA. Because you look at, like, they're two very distinct personalities. They hate each other. There's an actual real life, like, classic, you betrayed our gym and left us, and I'm defending the honor. And everybody's, that's what happened. And they had the coaching on the Ultimate Fighter. And like you said, they're basically one and two in the world at this weight, and they're both in their primes. And, like, and they hate, and they talk shit, and they look good, and they fight exciting, and yet, and I'm looking forward to the fight, but it's not like it's lighting my world on fire. Like, I'm a little more interested in, I'm a lot more interested in Colby Covington insulting Brazil.
Yeah, I mean, neither guy's, like, the best at trash talk, but there is some heat there. And the thing with Garbrandt is he's got star potential, but he hasn't fought since December of 2016. It's been a year since he fought because he had that back injury. I think he was supposed to fight back in July, but had to pull out of the fight because his back was screwed up. Presuming his back is better, I think you have to pick him in the fight. And then Dillashaw is just, I don't know, he just comes off like a little punk sort of. But
I just realized that there was a time when you would take a fight and you go, all right, these two guys are going to fight. It's going to be a big show. Let's have them coach the Ultimate Fighter. Mm. We'll get tons and tons of airtime.
Right.
It'll make them bigger stars. Yeah. And now I've come to the conclusion just now in this split second, giving it no real thought, but I'm sure I'm right, that if you're coaching the Ultimate Fighter, your career gets hurt severely because nobody sees you at all.
Yeah.
For like 9 months. In that time, if you fought on a pay-per-view, you'd get way more exposure. Because think about this. Does anybody know anything about Justin Gaethje's career right now?
No.
And he was coming, and he was so fucking hot. after the fight with Michael McDonald, and all of a sudden it's just like, and you're done.
Michael Johnson.
Yeah, whatever.
I don't think Michael McDonald should fight Justin Gaethje.
I'm trying to think of his nickname right now. American something, I don't know. Cobra? I don't know.
Gee, have you ever heard the stories like about Dillashaw in the gym? Like they would do drills, and then like he's hyper competitive, super competitive. He would race people to like the water fountain afterwards and like shove them out of their way because he wanted to be the first one to get a drink. Like he's a psycho. He's nuts.
He probably, I'm sure he's done that. I'm sure it happens a lot. I know Garbrandt supposedly knocked him out in practice or whatever, which is awesome. And then Chris Holdsworth is one of the, you know, lead wrestling coach there, and Dillashaw apparently like legitimately ended his career during practice.
Like kneed him to the head on the ground or something.
Yeah, like again, this is like this is legendary shit. This is real world in a movie. Like this is Karate Kid. Like you and like you betrayed my one master. You ended my other master's career. I had the best of you when we were young, and I'm gonna do it now. Like, are you serious? This is awesome. So, I hope the fight's good. I hope it's not just two pussies just bouncing around and getting that I am afraid to lose more than I want to win.
I don't think that's Garbrandt's style. I think he might not go in for the finish, but he'll be happy to beat the shit out of Dillashaw for 25 minutes. It's my take. In the semi main event, we have another title fight, Joanna Jędrzejczyk versus Rose Namajunas. Jędrzejczyk, if she wins this fight, will tie Ronda Rousey for most title defenses for a woman. I think the record is currently 6. With this win, she would tie that. Do you think she will tie Ronda?
Yes, and Ronda had a hell of a fucking run.
Yeah.
Like, as much as she's been a disaster recently in every facet of her life, for a time there was nothing like her in the history of the sport.
Right, and people shit on that, too, but what have you done for me lately, I guess, right?
It was so awesome. It was Mike Tyson with tits. It was just glorious. And now Jędrzejczyk's going to have the record because she's going to yawn her way through Rose Namajunas.
You think Rose could get it to the mat? Cause think she'd have an advantage
maybe.
There?
If she's got an advantage in the fight, it's there. Mm-hmm. He sure as shit ain't gonna be on the feet. I guess you're getting some of the body lock and slowly inching her way through. Rose is a tough chick, but Jędrzejczyk, she moves like a man. She's got that a little more athleticism than a lot of the chicks have, and I think that's a big factor in why she wins.
Yeah, it's funny because sometimes I feel like Rose looks like a killer. Like that Watterson fight. Granted, Watterson is smaller, but she just wrecked her. And then you've got like the Paige VanZant fight, wrecked her. And looks like a world beater. And then other times, it's like the Kovalkiewicz fight, she lost by a split decision. And it was just like, she didn't look real aggressive. She was just getting outstruck, and she looked like she didn't want to be in there. But I feel like when she's motivated, she's really, really freaking good.
I think she's a pure front runner.
Yeah, maybe.
And
yeah.
I think you put it on her back heels, maybe some Jimmy Choo's. She doesn't react that well. That was so stupid. And she's also not that great of a striker.
I just like that we both know what Jimmy Choo's are. And then what else? Joanna, it would be 6 straight for her. The one thing, at some point, it's going to happen. She's only 30 now, but at some point, she's going to get old. And my one concern with her is all these fights go to decision with her, like all of them. Her last 4 fights all went 5 rounds. You had Letourneau, Gadela, Kowalkiewicz, and Andrade. And she's getting hit in these fights. She's not in danger, and she's winning them on points, and they're competitive. But she's taking shots, man, and eventually that wears on you. 5 5-round fights in the last 2 years, it's a lot.
Yeah, and I think in almost every one of those fights, there's been at least one round where she got rocked.
Right.
Like, she took some serious punishment. Not like she's dead, but enough where you go, okay, that's putting some mileage on the tires. Right. I thought you were going to say that eventually she's 30 years old, eventually she's going to get pregnant. Which, honestly, that's a real thing for the female fighter. Like, that's way more of an issue for a female fighter's career than a male fighter's
career.
Well,
I think we decided a couple of weeks ago they can't get pregnant based on all the drugs they're on.
Fuck, man. I wonder how they... I guess if you get pregnant, you aren't in the drug testing pool anymore. You've tested positive for baby. Huh.
I wonder, like, if you can pop for, like, prenatal vitamins. I bet there's shit in those that is illegal under USADA. I can almost guarantee you.
I would be willing to bet that if you have prenatal vitamins in you, you shouldn't be feeding.
Obviously, but I'm just saying, like, the huge laundry list of shit that are prohibited under USADA. I bet there's something in those vitamins. Like, they're designed to, like, help your baby develop, but I bet they're illegal according to USADA, I guess is what I'm saying.
Gosh, I've got a fucking brilliant idea.
What else is new?
Fuck you. I need to find a female fighter to be a client of mine.
Okay.
Because here's what you do from
now
on.
That should be easy.
Yeah. Anytime you take steroids and you get popped, you just say, I had a miscarriage 6 weeks ago. I was pregnant for a while. My hormones are all fucked up. Who knows what's going on? It was a miscarriage. I didn't want to talk about it in public. It's very sensitive. I'm sure you understand. And then you just shoot the clenbuterol right into your ass.
That's one way to go about it. Two guys who I don't think have ever popped for anything are Stephen Thompson and Jorge Masvidal. They'll be going at it at welterweight. Both guys are top five-ish guys in welterweight.
Are you trying to say that Stephen Thompson's blood is pure?
It could be.
Aryan Nation pure?
I haven't tested it myself.
He's Richard Spencer's favorite fighter.
He does have a look about him. Jorge Masvidal does not have that look, though. Masvidal and Bisping had words today and were yelling in a hallway with cameras present, go figure. But there's something about Masvidal I like lately. Like, he's just cocky and arrogant and playing this thug character where for years I watched him and never saw that side of him, and now he's got, like, the big puffy jacket on, like, people used to wear in the 90s, and like the winter knit cap off to the side and not fully on his head. He's got that look going on, which I find kind of amusing. He's making a name for himself, which is good. Personally, I think he's a little small, and I don't know how he's going to strike with Thompson. Like, for me, Masvidal, I've always loved his jab. Like, I think he's got one of the best jabs in MMA, but I don't think he's going to be able to reach Thompson with it for whatever reason.
Yeah, no, I think that's going to be the big key the whole fight is the distance from Thompson with those little fancy kicks that it's just gonna annoy the fuck out of you for 15 minutes, but he ain't gonna get inside of it. And afterwards, I guarantee you, Masvidal's gonna have this like attitude, like, this is a bitch move, this isn't how a fight is, and he's gonna be kind of right in his world,
right.
But I think it's gonna be boring as shit.
Yeah.
Because Stephen Thompson tends to be boring.
Masvidal has boring fights too. It's only been recently where he's been working this gimmick where he's a killer and he's gonna, like, I feel like he used to outpoint guys all the time, but now he's got, coming off that Cerrone win where he destroyed Cerrone, it's like, alright, maybe he's gonna step it up and put the pedal to the metal here, because he's been around a long time, man. Like, if his time is ever, it's right now.
He's got the attitude, and I can sympathize. He's got the attitude of a man that has nothing to lose, where he just looks around at his life and he's just like, what are you guys gonna do? You're already not pushing me, so I can just say whatever the fuck I want to say. As long as I win, you can't fire me. I have to win fights anyways. I don't give a shit. And along the way, when you act like that, you let your personality come out. Suddenly everybody's like, hey, I want to see you fight. And now he's like, yeah, fuck you, let me fight. I'm gonna get Stephen Thompson in Madison Square Garden. I'm gonna fucking hopefully not break the hearts of a lot of snowflakes or hoping we get some sort of justice on the anniversary of Trump.
Masvidal debuted in 2003, to put things into perspective.
He's been around
for a while. Yeah, he was on those Kimbo YouTube videos back in the day.
I remember when he fought Joe Lozon.
That I don't remember.
It was a long time. That was like 2005, I think. Huh.
In the opener of the main card on pay-per-view, we've got Johnny Hendricks for Paolo Borinchina. If Hendricks loses his fight, you would think he'd be done. Nobody's really heard of Borinchina. This is only his third fight in the UFC, although overall he is undefeated at 10-0.
I think he's going to wreck old Johnny Hendricks in the second round. And I base it on the fact that Johnny Hendricks is a fuck-up. Like, it's just, this man screws things up. I don't think he wants to fight, but I don't think he knows what to do. I think his life probably sucks. I'm guessing his wife is divorcing him or something. I don't really know about that. But he just, come on, man. Like, you fuck up making weight 170. You go to 185 and you fuck up making weight there. Dude, that's real special dipshit. Like, jeez Louise, man. You just fucking ate yourself into fucking nothing. What a dick.
Yeah. He's hit a rough patch. Let's see. He is 3-6 in his last 9, and in those 9 fights, he's missed weight 3 times. He weighed in at 171.25 for Kelvin Gastelum. He weighed in at 173.5 for Magny. And then his last fight against Tim Bosch, he weighed in at 188.
No, that's actually 4 in there, because he missed weight so bad that they canceled the Tyrone Woodley fight.
Oh, that's right. It's pretty. His career hit the skids after that GSP split decision loss. Like, he, remember him begging for fights, and he was just knocking dudes out all over the place. He was knocking out Fitch and Martin Kampman, and he beat Condit. He was like, I just want a title fight. He's yelling for George St. Pierre, and there was people were behind him. Then he lost that, and it's been like 3-6 since then, and missing weight left and right. Even when you move up a division, it's like, ugh.
Yeah, he's a special kind of fuck up. Like, he's just kind of subtly been slow burning this thing.
Yeah.
And it's going to come to a head in Madison Square Garden, actually across the street from the Garden on, oh, is that the Wayans across the street? It might be in the Garden. No. The official Wayans are across the street. And some, I don't know if I'm supposed to say that. I don't know. I think you have to pass to get in. I won't be there in time.
On the prelims on Fox Sports 1, the main event is James Vick versus Joe Duffy. Good lightweights. Vick has been on a bit of a run. Duffy's hit a couple bumps in the road. But, James...
He looked really good in his last
James
fight.
James Vick, well, as far as Vick goes, he gets, like, no credit. He's 11-1, and his only loss is to Benil Dariush, but... I think he's like 6-1 in the UFC. He's another one of those guys, we talk about it all the time, with so many cards, 12 fights on each card, a show every week. A guy like him gets lost, but he's really good.
Yeah, no, he is he's a hell of a talent. Both guys are. Joe Duffy's a really good fighter. Actually, I like Duffy to win this, because okay. I think he's got that special kind of boxing to his credit. But these guys are, they're top 10 talent. Not there because there's just so many guys there, but if they're in the top 10 this time next year, I'm not gonna be like, oh, where did that come from? Like, they're really good fighters.
Yeah, I kind of like Vic. I just think he's the bigger dude and can take it to the floor if he wants to. Not sort of a la Poirier, but we'll see what happens. Walt Harris versus Mark Godbeer. That's the fight I think that got. Is that the fight that got moved because of soccer fans? Okay. And that,
No. This is the one that they pulled Harris to fight.
That's right. I can't keep track of all these weird things that keep happening. OSP versus Corey Anderson, top 10-ish light heavyweights, no one cares. Unless we can get the St. Preux choke again. That would be special.
I think that's how that ends.
Do you?
Yeah.
How? Just don't put your arm around his head and you'll be fine.
People are stupid.
How dare you? Corey Anderson seems very intelligent to me.
those are grown men cage fighting. By definition, they're morons.
On Fox, on the opener on Fox Sports 1, we have Randy Brown versus good old Mickey Gall.
Go Mickey.
He is pretty fine. Prelims, we've got Alexi Olenek. I think he's got, that's the master of the Ezekiel choke. Ion Kutaleva. Yeah, not, oh, Firas Sahabi's little brother's fighting.
Woo!
Alright. What else? You wanna do some stuff?
Let's get
to it. Alright, let's do it. Johnny Hendricks is probably not happy about this story. Oh, all my things are frozen. God damn it. Pop-ups.
What would Johnny Hendricks not be happy? Something fat.
Yeah.
Is Mayor Bloomberg trying to ban soda in some other city?
come on.
I mean, that asshole, he's behind the soda tax in Chicago. It's all paid for by Bloomberg. I'm like, this dickhead has got so much money and so little time. He's just going around from city to city in the country trying to get rid of soda. What the fuck kind of legacy? You're a billionaire, and all you can think to do is, I'm going to stop people from drinking Pepsi. Just buy a yacht and bang a model. Do some coke.
Teach their own.
What? It's just such a pussy-ass little wimpy cause.
So I got it. Johnny Hendricks is upset because Papa John's CEO, John Schnatter, claims that NFL's Roger Goodell has affected his business due to how he's handled the kneeling protests in the NFL.
You know, there's some real pressure hitting the NFL all of a sudden. Like, I'm seeing some of these decline in ratings, and some of the stuff is like, I know these stories are all bullshit, but like, if it was in a like, real newspaper, like, would ESPN consider dropping football if this continues? I'm like, if they're even, like, discussing that, this is football. Mm. Like, it should be like, it drops you. You don't drop football.
Right.
And but Goodell, I mean, this thing just keeps going on and on. And now we got fucking players protesting their own owner.
Right.
Like, they're not even upset about college. It's just like, this is crazy. Like, they have, all they would have had to do is have somebody like, just say, look, just bring in Kaepernick or Goodell, be like, look, it's okay. What Goodell should have done is say, the NFL thinks the players have the right to exercise themselves in any way, shape, or form. While we encourage everybody to respect the flag, but those who don't want to, that's their call. That would have eliminated that stuff. And then I would have said, by the way, we have offered Colin Kaepernick a job, an outreach job with the NFL. It's his for the taking until he can find a job as a quarterback.
That would have worked.
But instead, Goodell's like, what if I take a big stick and I smack a beehive? Let's see how that works.
You better run. So Papa John's has been an official NFL sponsor since 2010, but has seen its stock drop 24% this year, according to CNN. Now,
has he been accused of like molesting someone or something?
It's probably coming. He was probably banging a bunch of the store clerks back in the 80s when the company started or something. Anyway, essentially Schnatter, who is Papa John in the commercial, said, leadership starts at the top, and this is an example of poor leadership. The NFL has hurt us by not resolving the current debacle to the players' and owners' satisfaction. The NFL has hurt Papa John's shareholders. Schnatter attributed the sales slump to NFL players who began kneeling during the national anthem during the 2016 season to protest police brutality. What a bunch of horseshit, first of all. The NFL is not responsible. Did your business skyrocket when their ratings went up? Is there some sort of, like, it
could have.
You can't blame people kneeling for the national anthem affecting your pizza sales.
He could blame the NFL, though. I mean, if the NFL is losing viewers and eyeballs,
right,
then by definition, Papa John's is going to probably lose.
But I don't think that's an A to B thing. Ratings are down for everything. I don't think less people are shutting the games off because people are kneeling for the anthem.
The ratings are going down. I don't know if it's because of. I don't think that would have been so much that people would have turned the games off because somebody was kneeling at the anthem. I do think that people might be turning the games off now, though, because it's not that they don't support the players so much as it is they just don't want something political all the time.
Right, but
especially something racial. And the way that the owners have handled this, by just, like, some of them saying, no player of mine will ever do this, I'll fire him. Or somebody else saying, yeah. Or you know, and then they're approaching the owners like, these owners fucked this up. And all they had to do is say, hey, my player, I support them.
Isn't it possible that at a certain point your ratings plateau and they're not going to go any higher no matter what you do? Like, maybe people are just had enough football and it's peaked and the ratings are going to drop and come back in 10 years. It happened with baseball and happens with everything. Like, and then maybe it's your shit pizza, or maybe your costs are out of control. Like, you can't blame it on one type of advertising you do. It's fucking ridiculous.
No, look at this way. This shows you the state of the NFL, because I'm sure that the NFL's business going down on some level affects Papa John's. Does it affect them greatly?
Ratings are down 5%. Their stock price is down 24%.
Okay, so maybe it only contributes 5% of it. Yeah, sure it could. If the NFL's ratings are down 5%, then it stands to reason that Papa John's stock could be down 5%. Now, the rest of the stock is just down because, I don't know, hipsters don't like pizza or something. But no, I think what this really shows, though, is it shows how vulnerable and weak the NFL looks that a major sponsor feels comfortable saying this. Like he feels like there's enough PR to be had that it's worth his time and effort to tell the NFL this isn't cool. Like, I'm sure Papa John, being a papa that he is, has marketed this, whatever the fuck you do, market researched it, or he's just a big dumbass that sells average pizza. I
tend to think it's the latter. Yeah, I don't think you can blame your business and how it's doing based on one advertiser. Like, you want to go all in with the NFL? Like, that's just a shitty business plan.
No, but if you're from Papa John's perspective, you can blame the NFL.
You can, but you've got other issues, is I guess what I'm saying, and you should probably check those out. Yeah. As opposed to blaming some guy kneeling during a song.
I didn't get the impression he was blaming the players. I thought he was blaming Goodell for how he handled
it. He's saying that. Yeah, I mean, it's some of each, I guess. He thinks that Goodell should have nipped it in the bud and not let the play. That's what he's intimating, that the player should be.
Oh, okay, I see. Okay. I was thinking he was just like, he didn't like the way it was handled. He didn't care how it was resolved. Just he didn't think it was good. But I can see where you could be thinking, yeah, you should have put down these black guys quicker.
Speaking of kneeling, Oakland A's catcher Bruce Maxwell, who we talked about last week, is back in the news. He's the only Major League Baseball player to take a knee during the last season. He made some anti-police statements and cussed out officers during a gun arrest recently. 26-year-old Maxwell was arrested for assault with a deadly weapon and disorderly conduct in Scottsdale, Arizona on Saturday, after allegedly pulling a gun on a food delivery woman. According to police report, the woman said she was making a routine delivery of pizza and cheesesteaks in Tempe when Maxwell answered the door and stuck a gun right in her face. Lindsay advised me she was staring straight at the barrel of a silver handgun. When cops confronted Maxwell, he reeked of booze, cussed like crazy, and couldn't keep his story straight.
He then took a bump of cocaine off of his wrist and said, Mike Cernovich is out to get me.
But Maxwell, we talked about him last week at the restaurant where he was claiming he was being discriminated against, yada, yada, yada. Okay. So there you go.
So he's a very stable personality.
He is not a good representative for the kneelers by any stretch.
No. Also, I read something, but I think it kind of it changed things with baseball. I guess baseball has always had a rule that you're supposed to stand for the national anthem.
Okay.
And so, like, for me, if they've always had, like, the NFL's one, like, I don't trust the NFL to do anything for any reason other than pure cynicism. It's just everything they do, I don't believe that they give a fuck. Baseball does have these roots for, like, back, you know, people kind of like, oh, this is America, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, standing for the national anthem at baseball feels like it's more important than football, because it's football. And, like, I don't care what you assholes do. Like, there's just, like, it'd be like if basketball players took the knee. It'd be like, okay, great. The people that keep, like, sexually assaulting women and killing them. Oh, no. Oh, whatever. They're not hockey players, those fine, upstanding citizens.
Yeah, Bruce Maxwell is not making a good name for himself by any stretch. Have you... did you ever end up watching Stranger Things? There's a lot of hype about season two. Are you still anti-1980s? You're just going to ignore that decade?
For this type of stuff.
Okay, what type of 80s stuff is good?
Like stuff that's actually from the 80s? Like Ghostbusters. Like, I love Ghostbusters. I love RoboCop. There's a lot of, like, movies and stuff from the 80s that I love. I don't... But, like, this kind of Stranger Things where anything that's too much of, like, an homage at its core... I'm not a big fan of homages.
But you were bitching about Goonies and a whole bunch of...
Oh, I never saw that shit.
Right, but that happened in the 80s and was, like...
Well, I didn't say I liked everything in the 80s. Every decade's got its flaws.
How can you dislike a movie you haven't seen?
Oh, I've seen part of it. But it's not like I hate the movie so much as everybody's like, oh, your childhood wasn't complete without seeing it. It's just kind of like this annoyance. Like, look, guys, I'm sure it was great, but I'm also aware that I know how nostalgia works. And I know that there's a lot of movies like I liked as a kid that if I saw them now for the first time, I'd be like, nah, this isn't that good. But because I saw them I've seen Star Wars, like the original shit. There's something that makes you extra happy about seeing those primitive special effects because you get that endorphin release from nostalgia. Plus, this movie's good on its face. So I'm very aware of how my body chemistry is trying to manipulate my behavior, is what I'm saying.
You're so in touch with your own body.
Yes, I am right now. Yeah.
Anyway, Stranger Things is back. I liked the first season. It wasn't earth-shattering. I watched the first episode of season two. It wasn't bad. I'm curious to see where the show will go from here. But it'll probably...
It's a massive pop culture thing,
though. Yeah, a lot of Stranger Things Halloween costumes this year.
Yeah, like Netflix nailed another one.
Yeah, too bad everyone steals their subscriptions and the show probably costs like $100 million to make, but whatever.
Not my money.
What's $20 billion in the hole anyway in 2017?
Whole fucking plan's going down anyways, yeah.
Speaking of people going down, British nuclear sub-sailors have been fired after absolutely disgraceful parties with prostitutes and cocaine. You heard about this story?
No, I don't really know why the word disgraceful is being used, but I'll trust the writers here. Let's go.
Maybe fake news. According to the Associated Press, at least 9 sailors tested positive for cocaine following drug-fueled parties. One man had sex with a prostitute in a swimming pool. We do not tolerate drugs misuse by service personnel. Those found to have fallen short of our high standards face being discharged from service, a Royal Navy spokesman said. So basically, these guys are underwater in a sub, and then when they get ashore, they do a bunch of coke and a bunch of hookers, then they go back to work on the sub.
Yeah, that's what being in the fucking Navy's been forever. Like, that's the stereotype, like the women waiting at the docks. What, you're waiting at the docks? For whom? For the sailors. They're a bunch of dudes who haven't been around women, and they've just been around other dudes. All they want to do is fucking party. They just got a lot of it built up, and they're in a profession that encourages them to be violent. Oh, no. They did some cocaine, they had sex with some... Well, all they're really all this is the same. Guys, don't get fucking caught. You moron somehow got caught. Right. That's it.
Well, it's funny.
They're not going to get punished.
It's basically the subs. I'm not sure if the subs have nukes, but I think they're supposed to defend against it. Like, this is serious shit. And it says around 10% of the HMS Vigilance, which is the name of the sub, 168-person crew have either been kicked out, quit, are under investigation, or have been removed in what is believed to be one of the biggest sex and drug scandals to ever hit the Navy.
Again, this is exactly how sailors have acted forever. There's just something about being in a fucking boat with other dudes that just, it turns men. Like, it's not natural. We're not supposed to be that way.
Yeah.
We really... If we don't have women around on some level, men are animals.
Oh, even when they are around, they can be animals.
Yeah, we're look how bad we are when they're around. You take women out of the equation and we have no reason at all to behave. Look at them.
I think the concern now is with, like, it's a bigger story in England or whatever because of the stuff with North Korea and Trump. There's more concern that these guys need to be on the straight and narrow because something could happen.
They will be absolutely better soldiers for having done this. You have to blow off steam.
Yeah.
It's important in life. Some people take vacations and they go skiing. These are sailors. They only got a couple hours on leave. Cocaine and hookers in the bathtub. That's how you rock it. You got to get it all out of your system. You got 12 hours. The coke's out of your system in 24. You're good to go. You're back to saving the world. Plus, you're the fucking British Navy. Like, are you really going to contribute to saving the world from North Korea? Really? Come on.
This Admiral Chris Perry said that this is not just a submarine. It is one of our deterrent submarines, and it's absolutely disgraceful. People in the Navy should remember playing for our country on an international level is a great privilege. It is a question of putting service before self.
Well, yeah, but... You're still England. Like, seriously. And even, like, in America, this stuff is so smart, they probably just need, like, three dudes to press buttons. We have invisible airplanes that drop nuclear bombs. I'm sure our submarines have some form of autopilot.
Or, another good way to kill people is to poison their milk. Pakistani bride killed 17 people in a botched plot to kill her husband. This happened in Multan, Pakistan. Pakistani police say they have arrested a newly married woman on murder charges after she poisoned her husband's milk and it inadvertently killed 17 other people.
This is a Game of Thrones plot.
District Police Chief Sohal Habib Tajak said Wednesday a judge has allowed police to question the woman for 2 weeks. Seems lengthy.
you get 2 weeks with her. Let's see if you can crack her. What the fuck? The judge just decides how many weeks the cops get to beat you? Like, there's some stuff, we're going to give him 3 weeks with her. You get 3 weeks. You can't do it in 3 weeks? She's free. What the fuck society is this?
Pakistan. Jack says the woman, who was not identified, was married against her will in September. He says she obtained a poisonous substance from her boyfriend last week and mixed it in milk for her husband, who refused to drink it. Jack said the woman's mother-in-law later used the tainted milk to make her traditional yogurt-based drink and served it to 27 people of her extended family who fell unconscious and were hospitalized. 17 have died and 10 are being treated in a hospital. I'm guessing the death count's gone up since this article was written, but what the hell? So, okay, picture this. You try and poison your husband. You're like, hey, honey, you want some milk? He's like, no, I'm good. So then you, like, put the milk back in the fridge. It's in there. It, like, rots for a week. Then, like, the stepmother, his mom comes in and looks in. It might not even be fridges in Pakistan. Who the hell knows? But she opens up the fridge, looks in, grabs it. She's like, I'll make my special yogurt for the family for the game, the cricket game this weekend. And she gets it all together. Everybody's sitting down, eating yogurt, watching cricket. Then they all start dropping down and going unconscious. And the grandmother's like, what the hell? And then, like, one by one, everyone falls. Except the woman who poisoned the milk. She doesn't happen to be there that day. What the
her
hell?
Husband, apparently.
It's unbelievable.
What a horribly thought out plan for poisoning him. Like, if you have to poison someone, you just poison their drink. You don't poison the batch. You don't, like, say, all right, I'm going to poison the milk. I better make sure the whole gallon is poisoned. Like, what do you think he's going to do? Drink 3 or 4 glasses over a couple of days and gradually get poisoned? No, apparently not, because you put so much fucking poison in there that when they took the leftover that you have, it killed 17 fucking people. That's a lot of poison. On the other hand, she's probably been raped a lot lately because she's been married against her will in a barbaric society, so good for her. Also, mother-in-laws are nosy. This is all because of mother-in-law. Just couldn't keep her fucking nose out of someone else's kitchen.
Yeah. What are you doing with my milk? It smells sour.
You know they all live together, though. They all live together.
It's probably a cramped household, I'm guessing.
What an embarrassing, embarrassing culture. You know, if a man wants to marry and divorce a woman in Islam and under Sharia, he needs like 2 witnesses, and he just says, "I know for divorce." He just says, "Divorce, divorce, divorce." He says it 3 times, and it's done. That's it. She can't do it, but the dude can just anytime he goes, "Divorce, divorce, divorce." That's it. It's a really simple process. I really wish I'd have that one available. I'll be honest.
So every time Donald Trump tweets, I get an alert on my phone.
Jeez, your phone's dying.
I'm out of batteries. So his latest one, getting a lot of likes, I must say, and retweets. New York City terrorist was happy as he asked to hang ISIS flag in his hospital room. He killed 8 people, badly injured 12. And in all caps, should get death penalty, exclamation point. fuck those juries and trials. Let's kill this fucker.
I really like that he tweets like everybody else does. He's just watching TV. This guy's a fucking dickhead. He should get a death penalty. Like, you're the one that does it. It's your job. Although, some part of me wonders if he does that on purpose just to be like, he knows, like, people want to hear this. Like, say death penalty. Yeah, they like that. Death penalty.
Well, it's just awesome because it's so angry and all in caps with the exclamation point. Like, I in the morning, I'll open up my phone and I get all, like, whatever, Gmail notifications, and it'll also be Trump's tweets. Some mornings I just wake up and I'm scrolling through, I'm like, holy shit, there was like 8 of them at 2 a.m. or something.
I love it's, that. I love when he gets going.
It's unbelievable. It's very similar to Dana. Like, it really is. Like, once he gets wound up, you're like, oh god, what's he gonna do next?
I love it. Yeah. Meanwhile, what we really should be concerned about is the fact that we live in a country where they have FISA warrants, which are warrants that are obtained in secret, and if you are declared an enemy combatant, you can be taken out of the country, put into a jail, and you'll have far fewer rights to due process than you do now. So basically, they can get a secret warrant that you don't know about, and then take you out of the country without your permission, and lock you up without ever giving you any of your rights. And we all pass these laws, and then hand it over everything to Donald Trump. Like, we're all really fucking stupid. Because I really, really hope people remember Donald Trump. I mean, I know they will, but
it's kind of hard to forget.
Whenever somebody makes an argument, this is like my main argument 99% of the time for limiting government's power is assume the worst. Imagine what happens when so-and-so has that kind of power. Imagine what happens when Donald Trump has the power to just take you out of your house and lock you up in Gitmo, and it's A-okay. Like, oh, that's a bad one. When the President of the United States, whose favorite thing to do is to order people, he's ordering somebody's death via tweet. I mean, Jesus, this is fucking Saddam Hussein territory. Except for, it's not because we all know it doesn't count. For some reason, like, everybody in the country is just like, nah, that's the President. Like, Like, we'll have the crazy uncle at Thanksgiving. Like, oh, Uncle Joe's over there in the corner. That's our president. He's just over there tweeting. We all just kind of going to get the, just let him go. Just, look, I know he said that everybody's the same on both sides. Just let it go. Just drop it, all right? You know how he gets. You know how he gets. He's going to say something racist about the Koreans, and we're going to have a fucking fight on our hands, and this is going to be some bullshit. You know, he signed those papers last year. We know he had no idea what he was doing. We can get him committed now. Just let it go.
So he's on a roll today. Right before that, like 20 minutes ago, he wrote, "Great meeting with Cabinet today. Tomorrow I will be announcing the new head of the Fed. I think you will be extremely impressed by this person." Exclamation point.
And that actually may be, you know, here's the thing. People,
but hey, just let me keep going.
Oh, okay.
Prior to that, happy birthday to Gary Player, a truly great champion and person! Exclamation point. Prior to that, it's finally happening for our great coal miners. U.S. coal production is up 7.8% the past year.
Appointing the next chairman of the Fed.
So good.
We have to see who he appoints. And because the one thing I will say is that people aren't really paying attention, but things like, you know, Neil Gorsuch being on Supreme Court, appointing the new head of the Fed, no matter which president does it, those are the kind of decisions that actually leave an impact on the world. Like, the whoever runs the Fed, that's a big fucking deal. And honestly, on those big ones like that, because there's only been a couple, it doesn't seem like they get fucked up too much. I feel like there's just enough people being like, oh, no, Donald. No, you can't use... No, I don't care if that fucking infomercial was convincing. He does not have a system to make more money, all right? He can't run the fucking Fed. You just can't let him do it, all right? Neil Cavuto can't run the Fed. Just let it go, Donald, all right? And then right before that, he's like, hey, by the way, happy birthday, Gary Player. Yeah. Like that's like these are two totally fucking equal things. I'm going to point the next head of the fucking... of the Fed. Also, by the way, happy birthday to that old golfer.
Maybe it's going to be the old golfer.
That'd be a birthday present.
Oh, the woman from Pakistan is 21 years old, by the way.
Fucking poor kid.
Yeah.
Like, they really know how old somebody is over there.
Yeah, it was served to 27 members of the family. At least 17 people have died, including the husband.
What the fuck kind of poison are they allowed to buy, like, over the counter there? Like, I don't think I could poison 27 people and kill them all. Like, if I really wanted to, I don't know if I could do that. I'd have no idea what to do outside, like, rat poison, but I feel like that would taste funny right away. That's right, I have no idea how to poison someone. I would have to Google it, and that's how they would catch me.
Gotta go to the library or something and Google it. Let's see. A Wisconsin mom tied her son to the roof of the minivan so he could hold down the plastic pool. 28.
Look, that's gonna sound bad to people, but it's Wisconsin. Not that crazy. Also, let's see how far they had to drive before we passed out.
I'll give you some more details. Or deets, as the kids say. A 28-year-old Wisconsin woman is accused of driving with her young strap to the roof of her minivan. Investigators say Amber Schmunk had her child ride on top of her minivan to hold down a plastic pool. She's now been charged with a felony for the incident, which happened September 9th. Her neighbor, Barbara Sellen, says that woman needs to think about the safety of her children. To put a kid on top of the car is beyond ridiculous. Thanks for that input, Barbara.
The child chimed in. It was the coolest fucking thing I've ever done in my life.
Officers were dispatched to the area of Hillcrest Road and Claremont Road in Sockville for reports of a child riding on top of a minivan. The criminal complaint says Schmunk eventually pulled over and took her 9-year-old son off the roof, folded the pool, and put it inside the van. She then pulled into her sister's driveway. Schmunk told responding officers she believed it was okay as her father let her do things like that when she was that age.
Yeah, I'm not surprised at all. This is Wisconsin. Did they say where in Wisconsin?
It is Fredonia, Wisconsin.
I don't know what Fredonia is. But I'm guessing these people are north of Milwaukee, which means it's just all the same, almost hill people. Nice people and all. Better than me, actually. But it is the state that produced Jeffrey Dahmer. So, you know, a little weird.
The complaint says Schmunk stated she had no way to strap it down, so she had her son climb on the roof to hold it down while she drove. Schmunk later told police she did strap the boy down inside the pool. Schmunk was charged with second-degree recklessly endangering safety, a felony.
She clearly had a strap. You didn't have to use it on the kid, just use it on the pool.
There wasn't enough weight. Sometimes if wind gets under it, it can take right off. It needs some weight on top. I cannot imagine. Emma, my daughter, is 9. I can't imagine getting a pool at Walmart and saying, hey, just ride on top for a little bit. I'll go slow. Oh, I found this bungee cord. Lay down. I'll strap it over the two doors and just hang on to that. Like, who the fuck would ever do that? Like,
industrious hillbillies.
I can't wrap my head around it. It's like, just baffling. Like, it's so far from, like, removed from anything I would ever do. Like, sometimes I see these stories, I'm like, I can kind of see how that can happen. I cannot imagine putting my kid on the roof and driving around with my kid on the roof of my car. Fucking crazy.
Yeah, but you gotta have a seatbelt on, no matter where you are. So she had to strap him in.
It's not the strap. But the kid's outside the car on the roof and it's moving is the issue.
Did the kid get hurt? No.
No, the kid did not get hurt.
So what's the big deal?
I think it's the potential danger involved.
Well, there's potential danger just walking down the street, man. You could get hit by a tree or something.
You could. Just
holding on to the top of a car.
Yeah.
What's the thing? Just one hand on a car, another hand holding a swimming pool. Mm. Totally normal behavior for a 9-year-old.
Okay.
By the way, earlier that day, what they didn't tell you is that before she used her kid to tie down the pool, she also had just told the kid to hug the around the dog's neck and use the kid as a leash. She just grabbed the feet, the ankles, and kid held on to Fido, and that made sure the dog didn't run away.
Wouldn't it be awesome if she's like, oh, we do things like this all the time. He rides on top of the boat. We went for a flight, and I just tied him to the wing of the plane. It was fine.
Hey, you know, again, the kid loves it.
In Portland, Maine, police say an absent-minded shopper at a Maine grocery store took somebody else's cart with a sleeping baby inside, causing a lockdown and a police investigation.
Kevin Spacey said, I was drunk at the time. I didn't mean to do it.
Portland police say the shopper was mortified when he realized his mistake, but didn't bother to alert anyone on Friday. Instead, the shopper left the cart in another part of the store and retrieved his own cart. Police say store video backs up his claim. Police chief says grocery store staff quickly locked down the store. Police determined the conduct did not warrant any criminal charges. The baby was restrained in a car seat and slept through the entire scare.
I mean, I...
Okay, hang on.
Grab somebody's shopping cart on accident?
Sure. Yeah, that can happen.
For a brief second? Sure. Like, I go, oh, wait. I didn't put that in the shopping cart. Like, hey, that's not, I don't eat macaroni. What is macaroni? So again, I usually look at the shopping cart when I'm shopping because I'm pushing right. It. I feel like I'm like, oh wait, I didn't have a baby with me, did I? Oh no, I didn't. I didn't bring a baby today. And it wasn't on sale, so I didn't grab the fucking baby in here. Oh well, I've already moved the cart away from where it was before. Eh, it's just a baby in the shopping cart. I'm sure it'll be fine in a totally different location where his mother doesn't know where it is.
Like, wouldn't you... Here's the thing. Like, you're going to get accused for trying to steal this kid. So, are you better off just leaving it there knowing they're going to find the kid? Or do you go back and keep pushing the car around and looking for the mother? Like, either way, you're kind of screwed.
No matter, the one thing you don't do is you don't just abandon the kid.
That's true. But there's a ton of people around. You're in the middle of the supermarket. It's not like you're leaving the kid out in the parking lot or something.
No. It's a rule. You find a baby, you stay with it until you find someone else to be with the gotcha. Baby. You can't just assume someone else. It's a baby. It's just, the only rule with a baby is don't leave
it alone. So you shouldn't leave a baby alone, but it's okay to let your 9-year-old ride on the roof of the car.
9-year-olds aren't babies, are they?
No, but I'm just clarifying. I want to
yeah, no,
have,
no,
your,
that,
have your
that's
opinion
fine.
On record.
Yeah, no, that's accurate, yes. But it's a baby. And also, if you find, like, I've run after and found dogs walking around, and all I do is, like, I hold the dog, I'm like, hey, is this anybody's dog? Like, I wouldn't be like, oh, yeah. I wouldn't, like, grab the dog, walk it for half a block, and be like, yeah, fuck you, and just leave it. That'd be a real dick move. Also, what kind of mom?
Oh, if you ever walk my dog, feel free to do that, though.
But how did this kid get left alone by his mom?
I don't know. Like, to me, it's like,
grocery...
you know what, I think, I'm guessing what happened. She was grabbing something, he took the wrong cart, you turn around, you look, and your kid's gone. Granted, like, it seems kind of far-fetched, but it's kind of sort of possible. Also, she might just be a shitty mom. I don't know.
What store was this at?
This was, I don't have the name of the store. It was like
I'm picturing Walmart.
It says gross. It says grocery store.
And see, in my head, I'm picturing Walmart, and I'm picturing them in the dog treat aisle for some reason.
Could have been.
Like, just hiding the kid behind a big dog of Purina. Big bowl of Purina, I mean.
Could be. I was thinking maybe tuna fish. In Gloucester, Mass., a 400-pound tuna...
The Houston Astros are the World
Series. Ah, congratulations, Houston. Good win for a city that got destroyed in a bad hurricane, right? It's kind of happy, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
I guess.
A good storyline.
Just fuck L.A. Fuck L.A.
Nothing bad. No bad weather ever happens in L.A., does it? What are they?
Fuck L.A.
Hurricane? No hurricanes?
No. They get mudslides.
Fires.
And the droughts and the fires.
Yeah. Anyway, in Gloucester, state environmental police and federal fishery regulators are trying to figure out who dumped a headless 400-pound tuna in the middle of the woods. It had to be hauled out of the trees by a tow truck.
Why are you asking me about that? I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't even like fish.
The tuna season runs from early June to November, and... the fish could have been worth thousands of dollars, and nobody knows how this headless giant tuna ended up in the woods.
Tuna's really big, apparently.
Oh, yeah, they can be 800 pounds.
I thought tuna was like a little nasty thing in a fucking tin. I thought it just fit in a tin.
No, you probably never go to... You've never gone out for sushi in your life, have you?
No, actually, funny enough, I like sushi.
That is odd.
It's kind of grown on me. I don't like tuna at all. I don't like fish, but I kind of like sushi.
Wait a minute.
California roll.
That's
I don't
not.
Know. I have
that's
no...
not sushi.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. All right.
Isn't it sushi? What am I fucking eating?
It kinda is, but it's like Americanized bullshit. It's not real sushi.
It's got crab in it. It's
yeah,
got,
but
it's got
like
some
it's
sort
like
of...
imitation crab. It's not even real crab.
Anyway, and I'll eat other stuff.
When you think sushi,
like...
you think raw fish. I mean, come on.
Isn't that raw crab?
No, it's cooked. You can't eat raw.
Oh,
you can't
really?
Eat raw crab. No.
I don't fucking know.
So I'm trying to help you. I don't know why you're getting mad at me.
Because I don't like the accusatory tone in your voice. That you think that I'm not eating sushi when clearly I am.
You can't. Okay, fine. Okay. You're really. Eating sushi, you're right.
If men can give birth to babies, then I think that my California roll can be called sushi.
Okay. Alright. You're right, I'm wrong. Lastly, since I feel like I'm being bullied right now, we should go with a story about the college bully who was arrested after rubbing used tampons on her roommate's backpack and boasting she got Jamaican Barbie to move out of her dorm.
Now, was Jamaican Barbie the girl's actual name?
No. Can you imagine that on your birth certificate? That would be amazing.
Yeah, there's been a lot of people out there with names just as fucking dumb as that. So, in this day and age, Jamaican Barbie ain't out of the realm of possibility.
Essentially, it was obviously a woman using a rub tan. Is it obvious? I shouldn't say that. This was a woman
anymore.
Who was rubbing used tampons on her roommate's backpack, but this is in Connecticut, and on, I think, Instagram, she boasted that she could finally say goodbye to Jamaican Barbie following relentless efforts to expel her roommate that included rubbing used tampons on her backpack. Former University of Hartford freshman, she's been expelled. Brianna Brochu made statements on Instagram that she tampered with her roommate's property and also posted photos of the property she tampered with. In addition to causing damage to the backpack, Brochu also said she licked her roommate's plate, fork, and spoon. She also spit in her coconut oil, put moldy clam dip in her lotions, rubbed used tampons on her backpack, put her toothbrush places where the sun doesn't shine, and so much more. I can finally say goodbye to Jamaican Barbie.
I mean, the idea that you brag about this online is pretty fucking stupid. That's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. Before I pass judgment on this, I need to know all the facts. Okay. I need to know what Jamaican Barbie is like. Because I could see if you had some roommate from hell. Like, not that it's exactly okay, but these are the passive-aggressive things people do to get back at, like, some dickhead roommate. Maybe Jamaican Barbie is just some party animal, ditzy piece of garbage that just stays up late and drinks and makes her life a living hell. These are just her little things she does to fight back. Or this girl's a huge cunt.
You know, I can understand not liking your roommate. Like, I had issues with college roommates and stuff, and I didn't like them, but I didn't fuck with their shit. I just think that's...
No, but I do things like this, though. Like, when I park at a... If I'm parking, and, like, the person is so close to me when I get back, I can barely get in, I will always spit on their windshield. Always.
Here, I'll try and play audio of Jamaican Barbie. She has put out a video in response to the story. I don't know how this is going to sound or if you'll be able to hear it, but let's give it a try here.
2 weeks ago. And she asked me if I was moving out, and I said yes.
No, there we go.
And then she kept her moving on pause and started to text her friends. I thought she was texting her friends, telling her friends, oh, no, she's moving out, blah, 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 blah. I walked downstairs 5 minutes later with some of my stuff to move into my new room. Come to find out, I have my neighbor and two RAs approaching me saying, oh, you need to look on your phone. It's something, like, important, but my hands are full. So they showed me what they sent me, and it ended up her posting things on Instagram about what she's been doing to me. That's what I did. I'll read the thing again.
She doesn't sound that bad.
No, but she said axed.
Yeah, but that's a colloquialism.
Oh, yeah. That's why they always wear a ski max.
So this woman was arrested on Saturday following an investigation and charged with your favorite crime, criminal mischief, and breach of peace. She is no longer a student University of Hartford. The school had said in a statement on Tuesday that Brochu's behavior was reprehensible and does not reflect the value of the institution. Let me also be clear that I am confident the university has taken all steps to pursue this matter seriously and will continue to do so. The president of the college also added, racism and hatred will not be tolerated on this campus, period. He actually used the word period, which is awesome. The bullying arrest has gone viral on social media.
Guess what? They're both happy. I guarantee you, Jamaican Barbie, yes. Like, this is some level of notoriety now. Like, she's like, she's gone viral. She'll be like, I'm the victim. And like, she'll get off on it. Like, these fucking kids are fucking weird. Who live tweets and live Instagrams rubbing her tampon on somebody? And they're like, what the fuck? When you commit a crime, you don't videotape it. Like, it's just dumb. Like, whenever you see a movie, every time you see movies in a bank and they rob a bank, what's the first thing they do? They black out the camera. Dumb.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't like people who do stuff to people like that when they're totally unaware of it. It's just like such a douchebag thing to do.
Oh yeah, that's why I really hope that Jamaican Barbie is just a monster. It's the only way to justify.
Okay, if Jamaican Barbie's cool, coolest chick you'll ever meet, what should happen to the bully here? Like, is this a crime? What is this?
I think this is. I wouldn't even kick her out of school. I would just, you're kicked out of the dorm. You have to make, you know, financial restitution, like pay back anything that's been damaged. I mean, yeah, it's a crime, but I really think this girl just needs some counseling more than anything. Like, she's obviously got a screw loose one way or the other, whether Barbie screwed it out, I don't know. But it's loose. So, and, you know, she's 18, 19 years old. Like, kids do stupid shit. Thank you. Like, everyone wants to rush to judge them, but it's like, let them make a mistake or two here and there. Like, it's the same deal. It's like, oh, the 18-year-old guy, he made a pass at the girl. Maybe he was a little, like, maybe he grabbed her boob and he thought he was supposed to, and she didn't like it. Not like you're going to call him, like, a sexual assault or, it's like, he's an 18-year-old kid trying to figure out, how do I touch a boob? I don't know how this works. Like, they're dumb people that don't know how life is.
Yes, there are dumb people who don't know how life is. On that note, obviously you're going to be in New York this weekend. Live coverage of UFC 217 on the site, I'm presuming.
Will you be going
to any other festivities?
I don't know. Depends on where I'm at. It's like if I can.
Okay. And
like if I'm in there in time.
Can you go to some sort of presser and ask GSP about MMAAA for me?
That and his child.
Yeah, he supposedly has like a 3-year-old son.
Half black child from a African goddess looking chick. But somehow he's kept that a secret.
It's not really a secret. You just gotta dig a little bit. I think people know not to ask him about it. I don't see Bisping talking about it. Nobody's asked him about MMAAA either. It's like people know not to ask certain questions. But
maybe
I think
his child is like MMA.
It.
Maybe his child is like MMAAA and that it also doesn't exist.
Both have disappeared. They were both around exactly. A couple years ago and now no one can find either one.
They didn't make it 6 months.
Huh. On that note, thank you for listening to MMA and stuff on halfguarded.com. My name is Matt. That was Mike. Check us out on the website, iTunes, Google Play. We'll catch you next week.
Get up, cocksucker, because it's all over. Listen, we had a rough couple of months. Fucking Katrina's cousin Maria, the other one, Puerto Rico, Houston, fucking...